It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 22nd day of December 2020. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. Yes, indeed. If you'd like, you can augment your listening experience during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, by going over to Headon.live and clicking on chat room. And, well, by Jove, just pick out a screen name and a password, jump right in. You'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space today. And he's capably assisted, because he's going to be disappearing briefly, he's capably assisted by longtime pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Deacon Steve. So hop on in. The conversation is fine. Hi, I'm Bob, and every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. So thanks go out to our 22nd day of the month PayPal subscribers. Thank you so very much indeed. That means thanks to Tirani and Colin and Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of Southern California. Thanks to Bill in Florida. Thank you very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. And also, I have thanks to send out to folks who are helping out with the Bob's Oral Surgery Ouch GoFundMe campaign. We're making progress, and I want to thank everybody who's participated in that. Let's go back to the beginning. And thank you to Paul, and thank you to Mark. Thank you to an anonymous person. Thank you to Chris in Germany. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you to Andy. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Robert. Thank you to another anonymous person. Thank you to Susan. Thank you to David. Thank you to Tom. Yet another anonymous person. Thank you. Thank you to Janet. Thank you to Dan. Thank you, another anonymous person. Thank you, Janice. Thank you to another anonymous person. Thank you, John. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Joe. And thank you, Cynthia. Thank you all so very much. We're making tremendous progress on that thing. And, we're just a couple of $1,000 away from actually being able to do the surgery. And then hopefully after that, we'll keep this thing going so that I can, you know, do what has to come after the surgery, which is going to be a year-long miserable process that we need to fund on the front end. So thank you, one and all. And remember, anybody who jumps in with a $120 or more contribution to that campaign gets a heavyweight, heavy-duty, 15-ounce, dishwasher-safe Horn coffee mug. And Agnes and I are pulling together our list and checking it twice. Bought some brand new Sharpies. We've got the boxes out, and I'm not writing on the boxes because I'm practically illegible, and she has a much prettier hand, so she's doing the actual writing of the addressing of the boxes. But that process has begun. And again, I cannot thank you all enough. And so where are we this evening in terms of just funding the regular program, which goes on too? Jeremy was first past the post this afternoon. So we've got $295 to go to finish the evening. Thank you, Jeremy, very kindly. Jeremy in Vermont, there each and every evening. Much, much appreciated. Now, that leaves us, where? Yeah, we've taken care of, okay, a couple of program notes. Remember, the fantastic, wonderful Christmas miracle that will be the Horn's splashiest, biggest, most exciting Christmas special ever comes your way tomorrow evening. Our buddy Dan has been working on it. He's come up with a lot of good ideas. I think we're going to have a lot to talk about in the 2 hours we'll be together. We've got readings. There's going to be some singing. Don't worry. It won't be by me. And so it should be one of the most special holiday programs that we have ever done here. And I cannot wait to take off on it tomorrow evening. We will have a Thorn in the Front Porch Thursday for Christmas Eve. No program Christmas night, which is Friday night, probably because, I'm going to be cooking all day is what I'm going to be doing. Sorry, Anatole. No Maybach here. Let's put it this way. We're working on a May Chomp instead of a Maybach. A Maybite instead of a Maybach. You have to work through comedy like that. Not a Maybach, a Maybite. Yeah. I thought you said your dog don't bite. That ain't my dog. I know. Shameful. Just shameful. Do you mean you can't print Bob? I mean that my handwriting is really crummy and even my printing sucks, Sparky. So that's what that is. So that being said, today is, even though it's Christmas week, today is still Trump-tanic Tuesday. You know, it's that day in which we take note of, if not celebrate, instances of titanic right-wing intellect. Oh, dear God. It hasn't gone away yet by any stretch of the imagination, no. Let me check something here. Just checking with Brother Deacon Asa to see if there's something funny going on with the email right now, because I eagerly wait every day for Joey's journal, and I haven't seen one yet. So I'll keep an eye out, and then if Brother Deacon Asa finds it lying around somewhere, well, we'll get to it when it arrives. Let's see here. Where to begin? Well, I think the natural place to begin is, of course, with the reminder that the special runoff elections in Georgia are slated for January the 5th, 2021. And that's worth bearing in mind. Remember, Joey had said he felt like there were not nearly enough people working the door-to-door circuit and the sign-waving circuit. There's still a chance to get in there and do some remote cold calling, do postcards, what have you. and do our best to get John Ossoff and Reverend Raphael Warnock into the Senate of the United States. And I have to give credit where credit is due. I was engaging in my filthy morning habit today. And he finally caught up. Joe pointed out, no, Kamala Harris will not be the tiebreaker vote in the Senate. It'll be Joe Manchin. And that's sadly true. And thank you very kindly, Randy and PA, letting me know we're hot on all five streams. Everything seems to be working. That's wonderful. Dennis in Columbus pointing out, DT's got a bad case of the DT's, where DT's stand for Donald Trump's got a bad case of the dictatorial tendencies. Yeah, there's a cowbell for that. Dictatorial tendencies. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Steve. Brother Deacon Steve from Georgia Stan says, I'm on his mailing list. Nothing's landed today so far. Well, I hope Joey and Giraffe are okay. So that at least answers the question. Okay. So that answers that. All right, then. Well, yeah, Jack in Shreveport, so the little, said I've hit a feeling all day that I haven't been getting the usual quantity of emails. Other things have felt a little off, like maybe things feel slower. Yeah, it could be the time of year. It could be the shift in the seasons. It's officially winter now. Today was a little bit longer than yesterday. Hey, isn't that lovely? And winter is going to make an early appearance with the, shall we say, extreme prejudice. I got to make sure that we're well set for kerosene and the like, because, hey, the high on Christmas Day here behind the cornpone curtain, the high on Christmas Day is 18. Below, on the other hand, is 10. You know, every now and then these days come along in winter where we just have to get used to the fact that we're going to be cold. And those are those that it's coming up. It's coming up on Christmas Day. Hey, you want to know something cool? I'll go ahead and spoil the surprise. I figured out something. I don't know if I mentioned this on the program last night, but Christmas Eve will be my 100th day without a cigarette, and I did not do that on purpose. But isn't that just delightfully odd? And Christmas Eve is also, I mean, not that I believe in numerology or anything or any of that speculative alchemical stuff, but this Thursday will make 100 years since my grandparents were married. So their 100th wedding anniversary will occur on the 100th day of their grandson having finally managed to quit smoking. Yep. We will be bundled up in our Patagonia down jackets. Oh, we most assuredly. I've been known to sleep in those when it gets down to 10 or so. Because you can still move around a little bit. Patagonia is great stuff. It just is. And the commitment to environmental justice and the environment generally on the part of the ownership and management of that company is deeply impressive. And, of course, Patagonia is an annual sponsor of Coal River Mountain Watch and makes it a little bit less difficult for Coal River Mountain Watch to do its work. So, unpaid product placement, if you need warm and light and functional, go Patagonia, without a doubt. Yeah, Darlene with a note. Yep, we're gaining light every day. Bob, that's good. Yes, it is, Darlene. It's only, what, 89 days now, thereabouts, to the first day of spring. And that just makes me feel better. It does. Of course, it'll still be, and I'm sure it's the same for Darlene in Connecticut. The first day of spring does not mean the first day of warm weather. But it'll be a lot more hopeful. Yeah. But Patagonia does use some pretty ugly chemicals to make their rain-resistant stuff. Our friend says, I haven't been able to find out how they handle it. Well, I know that their overseas manufacturing sites are certified and regularly inspected, and they try, they do everything possible to make sure exposures are kept down and people are not put in danger making it. The other thing that they do is to encourage people to recycle their Patagonia goods. They've got a resale shop where there's, if you want new Patagonia, they'll sell your old Patagonia for you. And they repair anything that they sell. It is all the way around just a fantastic company. Yeah, Steve, I know it feels that way. 100-year anniversary, 100 days of not smoking. Further coincidence, it's the 100th year of the Trump presidency. Sure does feel like it, doesn't it? It does. It really does. Okay, there seems to be general agreement that, and this from Billable Rick, I don't think Joey's sent one yet, so we'll just wait and see if one pops. Lee in New York said, did Joy mess up the email delivery too? It would not surprise me one bit. Because there is, by way of news, and this is kind of Trump-tanic, in the great big relief bill that gives $100 billion of relief out of $908 billion, $100 billion of it actually goes into people's hands so that they can use it for things like utilities or food, you know, frivolities like that. There's also some nasty business tucked away in it relative to press freedom and individual expressive freedom via electronic communications. So there's a reason that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York was complaining that you can't expect a member of Congress to read an entire bill and digest it all in a day or less, let alone the American people, and she's absolutely right in that regard. Of course, the way you do it is if you've got a 5,000-page bill, you get a whole bunch of congressional aides together, and everybody gets 50 pages, and you can digest that, and then you put together all the digested information, and hopefully you don't have 5,000 pages, but you've got an idea of where the problems lie. But for good or ill, it passed. It passed the House, it passed the Senate, and now it's on it's on the way to COVID Caligula's desk, where it's expected he'll sign it into law, and then, sometime probably in 2023. No, I'm kidding. But it'll take a couple of weeks at the very least for the checks to start going out. And as I noted in yesterday's program, I fully expect it to him to insist that somehow or another it have his name all over it, because that's with a narcissist, malignant narcissist like Donald J. Trump, the J stands for just can't love anybody but myself. Seeing your name on everything is apparently the most important thing in the world. As a for instance, he's now been telling us he's telling people in his staff about how I want an airport to be named after me, and not some crummy little airport. I want a good airport. I want like an international or a national airport. You know, I mean, Reagan got an airport. Theodore Roosevelt has an airport. Jimmy Carter has an airport. I want an airport. Well, okay. I'm trying to think. I think the three-letter airport code for one of the airports in, I believe it's Namibia. The airport three-letter airport code is GFY. You know, go fuck yourself. That would work. But my, based on prior behavior, my personal recommendation would be Greenland. Put it in Greenland. You put it somewhere. It'd be an international airport because you can't fly to right. So I don't know. Pave 200 feet of Greenland. Put a port-a-john on it. Put Trump on the port-a-john, and call it an international airport. Never use it. The 200 feet of runway should be full of potholes to discourage its use, and then invite him to come up for the big unveiling and christening and whatever. And say, well, there you go, Donnie. There's your airport. And as the comedian said, here's your sign. But what I think he really wants is LaGuardia.
Donald J. Trump National Airport, New York.
Because who needs to remember somebody like Fiorello LaGuardia? Anyway, Megan, in quarantine, and we're still rooting for you, Megan, says, so he wants an airport like the ones he referenced in his 4th of July speech that were standing during the Revolutionary War? Precisely. And Steve in New York pointing out, just tell him it's in Bonomo. Neither he nor the Trumpanzees will be the wiser. Well, what about Nimrata Haley? I mean, she's in close contact with the Bonomies. God, what an idiot. Lee in New York, maybe he should get an airport in Namibia. I know. Somehow or another, we're gonna miss the stupidity, aren't we? No, stop saying that. No, we are not. We're not going to miss the stupidity in the least. Funniest thing I've read today, Flavio tells us, Nawalny suffers from delusions of grandeur, says Vladimir Putin spokesperson, who said such so as to avoid taking long walk out of shorted window in beloved Moscow summer. Airport, Matt in San Francisco says, I submit the landing strip of Jonestown. It's fitting. Many people lost their lives by following an insane man there. That may be the best suggestion yet. Jonestown, Guyana. Free glass of orange flavor aid with every ticket. Yeah. So what do we have? What do we have this evening for in the way of Trump-tanic Tuesday stuff? A quick note from yesterday's program. A couple of wonderful conversations, first with Tracy and then with Scott in San Diego. Tracy referenced a program produced by the Australian Broadcast Corporation, which is the publicly owned broadcast entity up over down under, the ABC. And in the U.S., it's Best of Both Worlds on Hulu. But it's not a remake. It's the original ABC series. Upper Middle Bogan was the name of the program originally. And just a couple of hours ago, I managed to watch the first 15 minutes or so of the first episode. And I have a feeling it's going to be hilarious, because the first 15 minutes certainly were. It's almost like it presaged Trump because there's a 13-year-old kid, and they say, they tell his twin sister, well, you know, he's like that. Remember, we dropped him on his head repeatedly as a child. Airport Schmairport, says James in Illinois. Find one that that's just about ready to be decommissioned, rename it, then bulldoze it, and use fast-drying paint on the sign. Dan says, Trump's airport. Usually airports are named after someone famous who has died. If he really wants one, we can expedite that process. That's pure sarcastic humor, Agent Fred. It is not in any way a reflection of reality. So here's another funny. From NBC Philadelphia. Finally, the nefarious voter fraud has been found in Pennsylvania-Bamistan from Delaware County. Headline, well, no. A Delaware County man is accused of illegally voting for President Donald Trump under the names of his deceased mother and deceased mother-in-law. On August 20th, Bruce Bartman, 70, of Marple Township, used Pennsylvania's online voter registration portal to register both his deceased mother, Elizabeth Bartman, as well as his mother-in-law, Elizabeth Wyman, who died in 2019, according to voter records. Investigators say Bartman is a registered Republican who illegally registered both deceased women as Republican voters in an attempt to reelect President Trump. Yeah. According to the district attorney of Delaware County, it was the only known case of a dead person voting in the county. Or two dead people, I suppose. An absentee ballot under the name of Bartman's deceased mother was received and recorded by the Delaware County Bureau of Elections, and the illegal vote was counted in the tally for the November 3rd election, according to investigators. So that's a felony, and that is voter fraud. And just like the only known case of ballots being deliberately, absentee ballots deliberately being screwed with by the U.S. Postal Service. Well, that was a guy in West Virginia, a known Trumpanzee, who messed with ballot deliveries and changed ballot requests from Democrat to Republican over in the eastern highlands of this state. So once again, we are confirmed in the theory. That's two felonies. Yes, yes. Randy Radar pointing out that's two felonies, Bob. Two felonies in one. Well, apparently it only says that one of them voted, but two of them registered, so it may be three felonies. Two registrations and one vote cast.
Lock him up. Lock him up. Lock him up. Fake news.
I got to get the last of these out of my system because there's only 29 days left of being able to do this. Remember, the new year begins. This miserable old year begins comes to a close in 9 days. But the first day of 2021 actually isn't for 29 days. So slowly but surely, I'll get this out of my system, and I won't call anybody else Shirley. From Lee in New York, stop it, Bob. It was named New York Municipal Airport by Fiorello LaGuardia. The story goes, LaGuardia got an airplane ticket from Chicago to New York. They took him to Newark, New Jersey. LaGuardia insisted, "My ticket says New York. You're taking me to New York." They put him on another plane and took him to Floyd Bennett Field. LaGuardia used this to push for New York City getting its own airport. Imagine a time when New York City didn't have its own airport. Wow. Yeah. So we've got Trump-tanic voter fraud. It'll be interesting to see if there's any follow-up on that as to what becomes of the 70-year-old Mr. Bartman. And a little bit of a follow-up, because suddenly European countries have begun closing their borders to merry old England because of the new strain of the coronavirus, COVID-19, the new mutation, the new variation that apparently spreads 70% faster. And I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on the radio. I've been trying to read and figure out what that actually means. Does that mean, because they say that they think the vaccine will still work on it too, but if it spreads 70% faster, I mean, does that mean the viral particles like have airfoils on them, or I don't know. But it is scary, considering where we are. And so France and Germany, Belgium, I think, one other country perhaps, have already closed their borders to the UK. Naturally, we haven't, because, of course, the UK is not a shithole country. And I've seen experts throughout the day saying, listen, it's probably already here. But nonetheless, Governor Cuomo in New York and Governor Inslee in Washington State, two of the governors who have tried the hardest to limit the spread of this godforsaken plague, have put in a formal request that anyone traveling to their states from the UK quarantine for 14 days. It remains to be seen whether that actually has any teeth. But it's a very 2020 thing to have a plague and then to have the plague mutate and become even more easily spread than the easy spreading disease was in the first place. Jesus. And so over at a website comparable to The Onion called News Thump, the following: Brexiters left stunned after several EU countries demonstrate easy control of their own borders. You know it's going to be fun when you hear that. Leave voters were left reeling this morning after learning that a number of continental countries had somehow managed to control their own borders whilst still being part of the European Union. France, Italy, Germany, and Belgium have all banned flights and ferries from the UK into their countries in an attempt to prevent the spread of toxic nationalist right-wing populist ideology and also the coronavirus. Simon Williams from Dover was stunned by the news. They just can't do that, he stuttered, turning a new and deeper hue of gammon. Nigel Farage told us that being in the EU meant we couldn't control our own borders, and yet those countries are part of the EU and have only gone and bloody controlled their own borders just like that. Surely that wasn't all a lie to get us to vote for an economically catastrophic break from our largest trading partner just to line the pockets of disaster capitalists like him, was it? One French citizen, Christophe James, told us after he had stopped laughing. It turned out to be remarkably easy to control our border. We just, you know, said, let's shut the border with Plague Island. And within a few hours, the restrictions were in place.
After all, what does Britain have to offer us at the moment, apart from lengthy delays at the border crossing in the new and more virulent strain of COVID-19?
And according to reports, a number of builders were seen this morning bricking up the Channel Tunnel from the Calais end. Yeah, I don't think this is the hard Brexit that Bojo was necessarily looking for. Right. Jude in the Great Northwest says, Mike from Cascadia might be able to answer your particle question. We shall see. A little clarification there. Steve in New York says, it's not 70% faster, it's 70% more infectious, because that's so much clearer. I watched a lot of CBC about this, you know, the Canoodlians. And generally speaking, doctors I've seen don't seem to be too terribly alarmed. Canada also shut their borders to the UK. They indicate that it's something that happens with viruses like this. One person I did see mentioned that COVID-19 could very well be something that mutates on a yearly basis and will require an annual vaccine like influenza. And Flavio says, remember, it's a new variant. It's not a new strain. I heard on BBC NewsHour this weekend, a new variant is a recent mutation, kind of like two wanted posters where in one the fugitive is shown, and then another where the fugitive is shown with sunglasses and a hat. The vaccine should still be able to recognize the virus. A new strain is older and represents mutations all along the DNA. The vaccine may not work on a new strain, but this is not, they say, a new strain. That if that is indeed the case, as Steve puts it, that we're going to have to get vaccinated annually, that will be in line with what we predicted here months ago, because it is a coronavirus. Because early on, we observed that the reason that the cure for the common cold, quote unquote, is a cliche in terms of medical research, is because the common cold is frequently a coronavirus, and the damn things mutate so fast that you can't necessarily keep up with them. So, as the old saying goes, you never have the same cold twice. But what makes it a little bit more distressing is Steve makes a comparison between the flu vaccine and the coronavirus, saying we may have to get one annually just like we do with the flu vaccine. But the problem is we get one annually for the flu generally between the months of September and February-ish. And the flu vaccine is effective for roughly 6 months. We've gone over this before. So that, let's say, I got my vaccination in mid-September, and so consequently, September, October, I'm good till mid-March for the flu. And the other 6 months, you just kind of cross your fingers, because the flu does tend to go away during warm weather. And the later in the beginning of autumn that you get your flu shot, the further into spring you will be protected. So Agnes got hers in late October, so she's good through late April. Well, if this thing is constantly evolving, and we know that it does not go away in warm weather like the flu does, because it has nothing in common with the flu, then we may have entered a phase where we are simply constantly vaccinating. And that's going to put a terrible strain on medical research, because to come up with these vaccines required an all-hands-on-deck approach. Everybody and their cousin, in terms of pharmaceutical labs and the like, have been geared toward developing these things. And so the people who are being vaccinated now, we know that they're going to have about 3 months of immunity at around 94%. So even they still have a 6% window of being infected by the COVID-19. That's a low number, but it's still a number. And we really don't know what's going to happen after month three. But we do know that people have gotten COVID-19 twice within 6 to 7 months of each other. There are people who tested for the antibodies and tested positive twice, 7 months apart, and they recovered in between time. So that's real. And if you take a minute to ponder the logistical nightmare of it, having to vaccinate the entire country every 6 months for the foreseeable future, that's rough. That is a, that, and that's a, well, a logistical nightmare. It's like standing in line, you get to the head of the line, you get your shot, and you just turn around and go back to the back of the line, and that line is 6 months long. I could, of course, be entirely wrong. But I don't feel terribly unconfident of what we're talking about here. Yeah, says Steve in New York, border closures don't seem to do much. The new variant of COVID-19 originates in Southeast England and has been identified in Denmark, the Netherlands, and in Australia. World Health Organization COVID-19 technical lead Maria von Kerkhove said on Sunday. However, there's other reporting out there that said that this thing was out and about in the spring in Brazil. And when you factor that in with the presence evidence of the virus's existence in places like Italy and Spain as far back as fall and maybe even summer of 2019, well, we may actually be looking at something that's been mutating all along and is a new thing for us curious and clever, big-brained primates to have to deal with, for pity's sakes. Yeah. So that's kind of a Titanic moment in its own right. Glad you enjoyed it. Jack said that border control bit was funny as shit. I wish I could claim credit for writing it. I didn't, just stole it from News Thump, courtesy of our pal Chris in Germany. But there's an element of truth to it, because you can almost see the cranky old Brexiters sitting around eating of a morning, eating their bangers and mash or their spotted dick or whatever it is, and saying, "Wait a minute, I thought we voted for Brexit because the EU said we can't control our own borders." But they did exactly what the bit, yeah. The goddess of irony also operates in the sceptered isle as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's that? Albert says, they need to tell Trump that we'll name an airport after him on two conditions. One, he pays cash for the land purchase. Two, he pays cash for all the construction costs. It must be paid 100% by Trump. Oh, but there's that. But he also, Albert, just to make sure that you're up on everything, the same article mentioned that he's got a hankering to have an aircraft carrier named after him.
Well, they named one after George H.W. Bush. They named one after Reagan. They named one, my God, they named one after Abraham Lincoln. I've told everybody that possibly the only president greater than me was Abraham Lincoln, so I got to have an aircraft carrier. And you know what? It's not going to have any of that those highfalutin catapults. It's going to have steam, steam. We're going to have steam catapults. Nothing works like steam.
You remember the great, this is like a year-end program in a way. You remember the great steam catapult stupidity controversy? Because, sadly, I do. Lee in New York pointing out, British isolation. I think they discovered water. Entirely possible. Entirely possible, Lee. But for a Trumptanic Tuesday, when we celebrate those titanic moments of right-wing intellect, I think we're in pretty good shape for the vast majority of the evening, of the podcast. Not everybody listens during the evening. What I was mentioning earlier about the little poison pill tucked away in the risk in the relief bill. I think it was Jack in yesterday's program who pointed out there's a big damn difference between a stimulus bill and a relief bill, and this is supposed to be a relief bill. The whole shooting match that they folded the relief into was a $2.3 trillion package to keep the government going, and then they shoehorned the $908 billion or so into that. And Evan Greer of Fight for the Future, a digital rights group, said that the provisions in question, quote, threaten ordinary internet users with up to $30,000 in fines for engaging in everyday activities such as downloading an image and then re-uploading it or sharing memes. And hardly anybody knew it was there, but these folks found it, I guess, through some sort of targeted search. And yesterday afternoon, Evan Greer said that the CASE Act, Felony Streaming Act, and Trademark Modernization Act, quote, are in fact included in the must-pass omnibus spending bill. Over at Tech Dirt, Mike Masnick explained the CASE Act will supercharge copyright trolling exactly at a time when we need to fix the law to have less trolling. And the felony streaming bill, which was only just revealed last week with no debate or discussion, includes provisions that are so confusing and vague, no one's sure if it makes sites like Twitch into felons. Masnick went on and noted the fact that these are getting added to the must-pass government funding bill is just bad government, and congressional leadership should hear about this. I haven't seen anything today to note that it was stripped out. So I guess it's going to be a wait-and-see kind of situation. Evan Greer went on and said in her statement, "This is atrocious. We're facing a massive eviction crisis, and millions are unemployed due to the pandemic. But congressional leaders could only muster $600 stimulus checks for COVID relief. But they managed to cram in handouts for content companies like Disney. The CASE Act is a terribly written law that will threaten ordinary internet users with huge fines for everyday online activity. It's absurd that lawmakers included these provisions in a must-pass spending bill." Pointing out that even small changes in copyright law threaten to have a massive impact on the public's ability to express themselves. It just gets worse and worse. The CASE Act, via The Verge's McKenna Kelly, the CASE Act would create a quasi-judicial tribunal of copyright claims officers who would work to resolve infringement claims. As outlined in the bill, copyright holders could be awarded up to $30,000 if they find their creative work being shared online. Proponents of the CASE Act, like the Copyright Alliance, argue that the bill would make it easier for independent artists to bring about copyright claims without having to endure the lengthy and expensive federal courts process. Critics of the bill, like the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Fight for the Future, argue that the CASE Act could fine ordinary internet users for engaging in everyday online behavior like sharing memes. And Evan Greer noted, we've seen time and time again that changes to copyright law have profound implications for online freedom of expression and human rights. Frivolous copyright takedowns are already a huge problem for the next generation of artists and creators, streamers, gamers, and activists. We need a fair system that protects human rights and ensures artists are fairly compensated. So we get this instead of actually providing some level of direct support to artists and creators who are suffering during the pandemic. Ms. Greer said Congress should be working quickly to provide immediate relief, not cramming controversial poison pill legislation into budget bills to appease special interests. And, of course, these omnibus bills are how we get things turned into law that could never make it into law on their own merits. This is the worst aspect of what Bismarck was talking about when he said the two things on earth you'd never want to see made are laws and sausages. And for damn good reason. Because you, you fudge stuff like this into something that has to pass, and suddenly the legislator, and you actually get some sympathy from me on this, legislators do, there is pressing and urgent business. And if you are the best, most progressive, responsive legislator in Congress, you still feel compelled to vote aye on the bill because you know people are suffering. And at the same time that you're voting aye, you're thinking, man, they really shafted me on this one. If a Congress really wanted to, why do I bother finishing? But if a Congress really wanted to, then you could make a legislative rule that says you can't do this kind of thing. But that does not appear to be anywhere in the offing. Go figure. Yeah. So it remains to be seen if this thing will be as bad as has been pointed out, but when things like this get snuck into omnibus bills, usually they tend to be worse and not better. True, Elbert in Rhode Island pointing out they need to name an aircraft carrier after a person who officially served at least 4 years in combat in a U.S. military unit. Well, George H.W. Bush qualified for that. But old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, damn sure never did. And this from Kenneth in Portland.
Bob, this is Donald Trump, your dear leader and death cult guru, wishing the entire Horn family a Merry Koopsmas and Happy No Jew Year. Hashtag MAGA, hashtag stop the count, hashtag Ivanka is my daughter, but she's hot. Also, as opposed to Dr. Jill Biden, nobody will ever call me doctor because I'm a fucking moron. Hashtag learning bad, hashtag science bad. And because I'm the worst president of all time, there will be no historical critical reevaluation of me a la Reagan or W. Why? Because I'm really, really bad, like historically bad. Anyway, I'll be Googling moving companies. Peace out, homies, and release the Kraken motherfuckers. Okay. Yeah, you get one, Kenneth. Yeah. That works.
Matt in San Francisco, subject line aircraft carrier. I'm okay with an aircraft carrier named after Trump. I'm sure there's a new Russian boat coming off the line soon. Oh! That'll leave a mark, can't it? Well, yes. Steve with an idea. Get North Korea to name one after him. Sure. And Robert in Australia tells me, you missed the funniest Brexit story. And I'll paraphrase this. A man living in Dover has found his back garden filling up with 2-liter bottles of urine. It's not mine. It's urine. His garden backs onto one of the main roads, and apparently it's in a convenient place for drivers to toss their full bottles as they pass by. Preparations for Brexit in and around Dover, the building of car parks for the thousands of trucks that are going to be waiting hours or days for customs clearance, have barely started, and porta-potties are few and far between. Thanks, Bojo.
Thank you very much, Bojo.
Signed, Robert, in Oz, in isolation. Hey, Robert, don't you, in Australia, don't y'all have a colloquialism to take the piss out of someone? Is that what's happening in that poor dude's backyard in Dover? I'm proud of myself just for remembering the colloquialism. So here we are at the top of the hour on this Titanic Tuesday. We've got $295 to go to keep up with fundraising for the program. And it would be mighty helpful if we could, so that we're not trying to dig out a hole. I'd love to just not have to say much about fundraising at all during the Christmas special tomorrow. That would be magnificent. But we got $295 to go, and if we could knock that down, it would be very, very helpful in paying a badly needed paid bill. You know, the interface is there at headon.live, PayPal. Let's run over and check in with Arnold up in PA. Apparently, Arnold's a mite hot. How you doing, Arnold?
I'm good, Bob. I can't believe that we have the nerve to sneak things like this into a must-pass bill. It's not surprising. It's just, as someone who helps in, aids in broadcasting of all types, and loves sharing memes. Girls love memes.
Is it just girls? Wait, I'm what? Hold on.
Well, no. I said a single guy talking. My bad. Sorry, back up the truck a little bit. Sorry. but seriously, right? Like, what else do they want to take away? I mean, they could take out my fucking birthday, but that's about it. I mean, that's all I'm willing to give up. I don't understand why we're going to expect anything less, but I don't know as a collective, what we in broadcasting are going to do. The restrictions are already very oppressive. Sony, for instance, on the show, we pay for license-free music. We have a package. And one of the pieces that's part of that package is flagged regularly as a Sony Music's property. And we've made it a process as part of the show. Our response with an official show email is fuck Sony. To which they always take the strike off within a couple of days, but you have to go through this process of knowledge, the copyright claim. We're already here. I think a tribunal or anything else that would allow creators a mechanism to go after other creators is a fucking waste of time.
Well, it absolutely is, and what you said earlier, I think, is equally important, Arnold. We're already here, because over at, say, for instance, Right Wing Watch, the right wing assholes that they track on a daily basis are forever filing butthurt false claims to try to keep Right Wing Watch from being able to clip out their more outrageous comments and put them up online.
And so, and that's and why so, the duration and so, of time keeps shrinking as what's fair use.
Right.
You
yeah.
know, it used to be
well, that's what all of
it was 30 seconds. And that, you know,
yeah, that's what all this is an overt assault on fair use.
And it's also, you know, it's the butthurt. It's the butthurt crowd. If we have a point, first of all, as lefties, we have to acknowledge that when we make a good point, somebody on our side defensive or gets a real good dig in, tomorrow someone else says they're sorry about it. And the right-wingers don't do it. Same is true when they have copyright violations. They'll plagiarize anything they want. They'll steal shit. They'll do all kinds of dirty tricks and then point the finger at anybody on our side if we do it, you know, even for a theme song. It's I hate these people. I hate them.
You sound like Malloy. Have I mentioned lately how much I hate these people?
It's the truth. It's absolutely the truth. You know, when nothing else comes to mind, fuck them.
Well, you can. I'll pass. Thanks.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah, but no, this meme thing too. Like when you included memes, I'm over here like, wait a minute. This is how you flirt in 2020. Like, what the hell are you gonna do? Take away my ability to share memes? Fuck right off.
Yeah, you know, no kidding.
Just no.
Yeah, you're messing, as we would say here in the hills, you're messing with McCortin.
Yeah, exactly. And some of them, I mean, are just so funny. I mean, who would want to limit the ability to laugh?
And, well, they're the unfunniest people on earth. But, you know, what is the actual truth of this is, you know, you manifested some outrage at this, but this is SOP for eons. You get stuff that you know just absolutely sucks, and you know that, you know, the only your very narrow constituency wants, the people of the American the hoi polloi don't want it.
Right.
And so you sneak it in on one of these goddamned omnibus bills. It's one of those moments where you look up and you say there ought to be a law. You just can't do that.
And the thing that is infuriating is as fast as it's come, it will not be erased as quickly. You know, you can look at the prohibition of cannabis. You can look at anything that was done quickly. It's impossible to undo in a lot of cases.
Oh, no.
So
once
in 20 minutes.
Yeah, once a law.
It'll take 80 years to make it go away.
Look, I mean, the classic case in point, the Alien and Sedition Act. Now, that was passed under the Adams administration. Mm-hmm. Generations of young, eager legal scholars have opined in law review articles and moot court and what have you about how that's really quite unconstitutional, and yet there it sits. And that's 1802.
And 1802, yeah. So, okay. it's only a couple hundred years. No big deal. But that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, this will be something that, you know, it's one more thing that has to be made note of to get rid of. In what time do we have to do that? He's just, I can't blame Trump for this, but he's not smart enough to veto anything. You know, sign part of it or make a signing statement. You know, we can't expect any of that nuance from him.
No, probably not. And remember, they did try to introduce during the Clinton administration the line item veto, and the Supreme Court took one look at that and said, "Oh fuck, no, you can't have that."
Yeah, oh fuck. I remember that. You know,
I mean, I wonder if it would have been. I wonder if it would have been the same result if a Republican had been in office. But that's just my basic cynicism.
Well, no, I agree with you. I think if it had been like Dear Leader, a dim leader, I think we would have had a different ruling there. If you remember, you know, his narrative always was he's the decider. You know, when the Republicans are in control, you know, they speak to God. And when we're in control, whatever that means as far as Democrats, you know, God has to save us. you know, the holy must save us.
Well, last night I responded to one of Rick Smith's tweets, and he was talking about the ever so narrow chance of getting anything done. And and I said, well, you know, it all begins with Ossoff and Warnock. And he said, yeah, and if we get them, maybe we get a 10% chance of getting something done. And I said, yeah, and we have to fight like rabid animals for that 10%. I mean, I hate it that it's this way. I hate it. But here we are, and we're in this handbasket, and apparently the way is broad. And it goes to hell.
The right wingers, when they have any kind of power, when they have any kind of what people like to call political capital, they steamroll as much as they possibly can.
Sure.
And Democrats seem to be apologists. They seem to like to slow walk things. And I appreciate not making mistakes. But sometimes you have to just, you know, grab the ring while you can. And if if it's only two fingers or one finger or a fingernail, what, you got to grab the ring anyway. And they don't seem to understand that. We need a not radical change, but we need the American people to feel like somebody gives a shit about them.
Well, yeah, and we also need to get better at this. Generally speaking, it always feels like we're the Washington Generals and the Republicans are the Harlem Globetrotters. To use that reference again.
yeah, that's fine. It's true. You know, they get all the shit done, and then we have to live with the carnage. And then when we have control, all their bad policies has destroyed everything, and we have to live through 4 or 8 years of how bad we fucked up.
Do you remember the Patriot?
They broke the toy before they handed it to us.
You remember the Patriot Act in 2001? And
absolutely.
people were running around with their hair on fire going, oh, this sucks. And the response was, well, don't worry. If there are any problems, we'll amend it later on further down the line. How'd that work out?
That was code for, if there's any problems, we'll just make it worse down the line. Rick talks about, I don't know if he's ever talked about it on the show, but he talks about going to a public meeting where he lives about the Patriot Act. And everybody at the meeting that was for the Patriot Act, you know, the advocates had not read the act. And everybody who was there in opposition
had
actually read it. And Rick's thing was like, well, so if you're for this thing, how come you haven't read it yet? And the lady was like, well, because there's nothing bad in it. Don't worry. And there's nothing bad in it. Don't worry. Are you kidding? Terrorism wins when you're afraid.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a good bill. It's named the Patriot Act.
Tell them it does your opening.
Yeah, so, and by the way, you hear Darlene in the background there. I joined Darlene to this call because I think she's...
Oh, hello, Darlene.
Hi, Arnold. Hi, Bob. Sorry, I didn't know I was on. Oh, I'm talking to myself. Hey, great conversation. Awesome conversation.
Thank you.
And I
love calling in and
stirring
up the pot.
Cool. And I just wanted to say, hey, Bob, if you could post the telephone number you gave me, I know it's probably not a toll-free number, but I'd rather call in. I have my phone number, my phone plan. You know, I can call anywhere in the country for, a flat fee.
Right.
So I'd rather not tie up the stress line, and I'd be happy to make
line,
but I don't see it on your
line is always there. It's just that it kind of sits in reserve in the background for moments like this when the stress line is down. But basically what it is it's a phone number that comes in through Skype. So it's the same thing as the Skype line, only it's a dial-in number. And for everybody, for future reference or for the next day or so until or whatever, it's 304-574-8178. And we've used it a lot in the past, but the stress line becomes popular, I guess, mainly because it's A, toll free, and B, we call it the stress line. So we'll call this the double stress line, because the stress line is down. Or
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, shoestring broadcasting.
Well, double stress works. I grind my teeth enough for two people, so that's fine. Makes sense. The double stress. That's funny.
There you go. But I mean, I think that the conversation you and Arnold are having is right on. I think that. And Bobby, I know you've talked about this, that our job, our work is not done. Assuming we all get to January 20th in one piece, I think we need to, something about rabbits.
No, eat dirt and run rabbits. Yeah.
There you go. Because, we worked hard to put the Democrats in the Oval, and hopefully eke out some sort of a tie, if not a majority, in the Senate, and maintain that kind of tenuous majority in the House, which I still don't quite understand that. And they need to deliver, and the only way is to start putting the pressure on Democrats to deliver. And I'm not sanguine about their capabilities in that regard, because we're still keeping the quote-unquote old guard is still in power. The Chuck Schumer.
No, people like Pelosi. And I'm not hating Nancy. I just
Same
feel
here.
Like we just need like new faces. We need new energy. We need.
Well, but I want to. But Arnold, I want to. And look, I know, and I've taken some grief for suggesting that Nancy Pelosi was actually quite effective at her job. I've said that she is, with the understanding that she is never going to do everything I want. There is no perfect progressive Speaker of the House, and there may never be a really honest to goodness ideologically pure Speaker of the House. And there was some
right.
business with a committee assignment that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wanted.
Yeah.
And she
that
got
pisses me off. I'm
oh,
sorry.
She got she, no, no. It's okay, Darlene. It pissed me off too. It was a rat fuck.
Go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead.
Exactly, and that pisses me off, because let me tell you something, Bob Arnold. I understand where you're coming from, and I got into a kind of a dispute with a dear friend of mine about this today with Nancy concerning Nancy Pelosi. And I agree with you. I agree 100%. She's not going to, she's a great strategist, all of this shit, but I'm telling you, she shut AOC down, and AOC really and truly is the future. And we have to prevent her from being Arnold, and Bob, you said this the other night, and I'm probably butchering it. We have to prevent AOC from being Hillary-ized, like they're trying to do to Dr. Biden, Dr. Jill.
Yep.
We have to prevent this, because let me tell you something, AOC's, she comes back with the punches to the point where the other side actually respects her. Because she is so good with the the online stuff, and she is so good with the quick, punchback. She doesn't let anything slide.
No, she's not going to take any shit either. But Darlene, let me just point out a couple of things. The rat fucking that she took was led by Henry Cuellar of Texas. Now, she earned his ire by backing his significantly more progressive primary opponent. The primary opponent, and by extension, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, lost. And elections do have consequences, and Cuellar has seniority out the gazoo. It was my understanding, reading the article, that actually Nancy Pelosi didn't really weigh in on Cuellar's side. He just had the requisite amount of stroke to serve a big ice cold dish of revenge. And I've got misgivings about, and look, you know, she's made no bones about it. She says, you know, I'm going to support primarying Democrats. Well, that's going to be a dangerous strategy. Because
who's she? Which she?
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's already established a history of challenging other Democrats with allegedly more progressive candidates.
Right.
And I understand if that's her philosophy, but it's hard for me to sit here and say, well, you know, that's really terrible that was done to you, because this is politics, and like that famous Boston politician of days gone by said, politics ain't beanbag. It is a brutal, bloody contact sport. And so just to finish it off, Pelosi didn't, by my understanding, actively intervene in that. That was just Cuellar exercising his own power. But two, when we talk about wanting somebody besides Pelosi, I remind everybody of what I call the Arafat rule. Oh, golly, the Israelis hated Yasser Arafat. They couldn't get rid of Yasser Arafat fast enough. Until they did. And that's how they got... The Arafat's law is that whatever you hate and want to get rid of will be replaced by something you hate even more. And so, I don't know how many people are looking this far down the road, but the heir apparent to Nancy Pelosi, who probably very likely has the votes, is Hakeem Jeffries.
And I'm fine with that. I'm fine. I think he would be terrific, quite honestly.
You might want to read a little deeper.
Oh, okay. Wow, okay. I'm shocked to hear that.
Wall Street through and through, you know. There's a lot to be worried.
Then I guess Bob.
And then third, just to make the final point, and I'll quit, and you can respond. This is census year. At least part of, I'm not entirely sure if it's entire, but at least part of the state legislature of New York is Republican, which means there will be a redistricting. Yep. And I remember what happened the last time there was a progressive firebrand in office who had run afoul. And what happened then was the redistricting of Ohio, and they took two reasonably progressive candidates and gerrymandered their districts so that they then had to turn around and run against each other to hang on to their seats, and that's how Dennis Kucinich got run out of Congress. And that could very easily happen in some sort of redistricting move if the Republicans are in a real rat-fucking mood to AOC's district, because her district as it stands, she's going to be a member of Congress as long as she wants to, as long as that district is what that district is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Darlene?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that you have to fight fire with fire then. You know, I'd like to see that article, the deep dive article about Hakeem Jeffries, you know, who's African-American, right?
Yeah.
So I'm shocked to hear about his embeddedness with Wall Street. But
Cory Booker.
The Republicans, yeah, Cory Booker, I can kind of sort of see that, I guess.
I'm not going to be when it comes to taking corporate money. You don't get a pass because you're any particular, whether you're an old white dude or a young black man, you get no pass if you take corporate money from me. So I'm colorblind when it comes to this. So in the case of Cory Booker, for example, I've watched him speak with eloquence and be very direct and to the point, and know, unfortunately, that he would do anything in that money worshiper kind of way. So I like him, but I can't trust him. And I'm assuming that that's the same thing with who you guys are talking about now. If he's
Wall Street money. I think with I guess I don't understand why AOC is treated. You know.
Well,
me,
one because female.
I think she is. I think that we need to fight fire with fire, and I think that, you know, she's called extreme when in reality, I guess, ultimately, I guess the question is then, you know, what's the point of our of this show? You know, I mean, if things are going to be moderate, if that's the way to go, you know, like that's what apparently catapulted Joe Biden into, you know, to become president-elect.
What's the point? We need the tensions. Yeah, what
right?
I hope what
we
I hope
need
the point
have somebody.
What I hope the point of the show is, Darlene, is to try to figure out a way to better talk about our progressive values and our progressive ideals so that we're not forever on the outside looking in.
Right,
but,
shouting
but
into the dark. I think the other thing,
like Nancy Pelosi preventing somebody like an AOC from becoming on the inside, she's boxing her out. Wouldn't you agree?
It was my impression that she was not actively involved in screwing over AOC in that particular set to. I'm looking
How
now.
So
I also believe
the that
the
sorry Arnold, my apologies. Go ahead.
The system, I believe, works in a manner that it doesn't really matter who the figureheads are. Like when I say I want to see somebody, you know, younger and hipper than Nancy, only if they can perform change and innovation and bring a sense of, you know, fire with them. If we have to have the status quo, is the status quo what serves the corporate masters? If that really has to be all that we guess, it doesn't really matter who they are. Just to speak to what you said about what the purpose of the show is, shows like this exist so that people like us can find each other and not be desperately alone shouting into the ether. And they allow us places to communicate amongst ourselves and share ideas because we all have similar ideas but much different ideas. I learn a lot from the rest of the audience every time I listen.
And I agree with you, Arnold, but I guess it really doesn't matter if we can't get the power to do what I don't think is necessarily radical or extreme. It's just being humane and human. And it's like it's twisted so that somebody like an AOC, who I think is a very good person, I think she's got a good heart and she's a good person, is ostracized. That is so fucked up. It's messed up. And, you know, Bob, we've talked about this. I know, you know, about the Senate, Centix, I think you said, whatever, the Roman, you know, the for old.
Yeah.
We talked about this,
Senex.
I think, the last time I called in, we're geriatric, and, you know, you're
yeah,
much
yeah,
better
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Nancy's right up there.
Well, she's old.
She's in the house,
but let me help a little bit here because just to give people the backgrounder on the rat fucking, what we're talking about is a seat on the Energy and Commerce Committee. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez raised her hand for the seat first. There wasn't any serious opposition. She was backed and endorsed by Gerald Nadler, who is the dean of the Democratic caucus in the New York delegation.
Yes.
She had everything in place. But all of a sudden, this backbencher decides she wants the seat. And guess who backed the backbencher for the seat? Hakeem Jeffries.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so that's an interesting bit of information there. Fuck this. Oh, okay.
So I just want to say, jump off of Congress for a second.
Wow.
I have people who bust my chops about being bitter about Bernie losing. And I just want to say publicly here that I'm not bitter that Bernie lost and that we have Biden instead of Bernie. I don't care. I don't love Bernie so much that I care he didn't win. But I will say that what we call socialism in the populace now is just some normal human decency
precisely.
In most of the world.
Precisely. What is unfortunately bandied about as socialism, and we've had this conversation before too, what is bandied about as socialism is just plain old garden variety, good old-fashioned FDR Democrat.
Exactly.
And
yes,
we would be so much further
completely.
Ahead of the game if that's what we'd called it and hadn't brought the dreaded S word into the conversation, not because I hate socialism, but because I understand the American zeitgeist.
Correct.
Well, the Republicans are so much better with the labels because it's so damned easy for them to just gin up fear by throwing out these labels. I mean, we see Loeffler as sort of the queen of that, right? You know, just spew out the fear and hit those buzzwords code, you know, the code words and all of those things. It's so much easier to do that, you know, than to have to sit there. It's more difficult to have to explain, no, this is not what it is. You know, but I think that the fact that what was 81 million so far, I guess, that voted for Biden,
yeah.
You know, I think he has a mandate. And I think that we need to get tougher. And we've been, and this is the reason that I originally called in, we need to get more, and I'm not just saying us as progressives, but Americans that voted for Biden and that are on the real shitty end of the stick due to COVID and people that are waiting in food lines and everything else, we need to be extremely irate about this pathetic stimulus package. We need to not only let the Republicans know, right, Arnold, but the Democrats know. Like,
hell yeah. So the simple math, third grade math for the win. $900 billion by 327 million people is 2,700 and some change. So we get $600. Where's my 2,100 extra bucks? Like,
and
what's going
what?
On here?
Exactly, Arnold. And last night on the program, a sweetheart called in. He calls in a lot, and he's a sweetheart. And I know you know who I'm talking about, Bob. And he kept saying, I am grateful, you know, for the $600, but, you know, no, you do not say that. You do not say I'm grateful. No, this is that is
right. It's the functional equivalent of
fucking insult.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
That is an insult. And there was somebody and I'm forced to have to listen to CBS, but like NPR, you kind of learn something. Right? I have to listen to CBS in the morning when I listen to my local news because that's what they chime into. And my local news is, I've got issues with that too. But, and it's all conservative. But at the 7 o'clock hour, they wouldn't put this on the 8 o'clock hour because that's the big one with what's his name, Steve Kathan. You know, but when they have the lady, Rodriguez is her last name, that's the anchor that gives the 7 o'clock on the radio. They quoted a woman, and it was beautiful, and I'm going to butcher it, but she said, $600, she goes, that's what the rich people think, the poor people think, is a lot of money.
Yeah, from a historical perspective, Darlene, that's the equivalent of John D. Rockefeller giving out dimes.
Exactly. You know, and people should be,
nothing now.
Exactly, Arnold. No one should be saying that this stimulus package is acceptable. And I give Nancy credit because I was listening. She had a very lengthy speech. She was in her nice green dress, you know, for the holidays and all of that classy stuff she does. And she said, well, you know, I guess Trump wants to put his name on the checks, but this is the American people's money. The American tax-paying people's money, so she was zinging him.
Right.
But she needs to also realize, too, yeah, that's our fucking money. Like, one of my family members said, who the hell are they to tell us how much we get? This is our money. This is our money. And this is an insult. The stimulus package is an insult. And people, we've been so brainwashed. We've been so brainwashed to think that any pittance – that they give us is somehow a gift.
Oh, look,
that we're
a crumb.
Deserving.
Yeah, look, a crumb. How good they are to us. A crumb.
Exactly.
And something else to bear in mind, and I go back to what Jack said in yesterday's program. I think we, you know, because I'm a language nerd.
Word knowing.
Yeah, I know. But Jack
good
stuff,
was. Love it.
Jack was spot on when he said, this ain't no stimulus. A stimulus is what you give people, you know, when the economy's a little sluggish. But this is, this is relief. And if it's a relief bill, this is the relief bill with no goddamn relief. Because remember what the Democrats gave up. They gave up actual meaningful aid to the states and municipalities. And the reason they did it, and... it makes me wonder if the Democrats have ever sat down and played even one hand of poker. They're doing what is called and this is not a vulgar term. It's not at all. It might sound that way, but it's not. What the Democrats are doing right now is called betting on the come. Okay? They got their five cards. We're playing five card draw. Their five cards, they've got, you know, they got it.
I've
they,
never heard that.
They got a pair of deuces, Jack. They got a Jack high pair of deuces, okay? And they just know that if they keep the two deuces and the Jack and they put in two and they get two back, it's going to be the other two Jacks. And by God, they're going to have a full house. And so, you know, all the fucking chips go into the, I'll take two cards. And, you know, so you've got deuce, deuce, jack,
and
six,
oh shit, I don't have
four.
Birth control. I didn't take the birth control pill today. Oh, jeez.
And so,
well,
yeah.
See, that's
betting,
why I'm not sanguine.
Betting,
I'm not sanguine about
betting
about
on the cum
the
will break your heart. You know, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago during a Friday on the Front Porch talking with Roger in Oregon. I said, because he said he didn't play the lottery because he'd spent too many years explaining the statistical likelihood of hitting it to too many high school students. I said something like, and did you ever explain to them the odds of drawing to an inside straight? And Roger laughed and said, oh, hell yes. Yeah, because you're sitting there and you've got 2, 3, 5, 6. And so you play, I'll take one dealer and all I got to do is get the four. But Jesus Christ, there are twos, threes, fours, fives, sixes, sevens, eights, nines, tens, jacks, queens, kings, and aces. And the odds of you getting that four are really miserably slim. All four fours
so
may
funny.
Already be in somebody else's
so
hand.
True.
But you're shoving that pot into the middle of the goddamn table. I'm getting that damn four. And then everybody puts their cards up and you go, oh, I'm fucked. I'm broke. I'm busted. And just to finish the analogy, that's what the Democrats are doing right now. They're betting on the come. They think that after January the 20th, we're going to, some of the moderates, some of the Biden types think that they're going to be able to work with Mitch McConnell, even if we don't have a majority in the Senate. Others just flat out, oh, by God, Warnock and Ossoff are going to get in. And
even those people don't realize that, you know, what Joe Scarborough said this morning, echoing something that I've been saying for goddamn months, is the truth, and that is Joe Manchin will be the swing vote. You know,
and
because
that's definitely. Yeah.
And so
that's scary. That's so disheartening. But that's
and it's
where...
going to be on issues. It's going to be on issues of air quotes, you know, morality. You know, so you know, he's going to be the I want a clean bill type. You know, he's going to be a real problem.
Well,
he is. I agree 100% with the. I agree with the two of you completely. But this is where, look, I think in part, and I don't know if either one of you got this sense that the Supreme Court and others didn't want to fuck with the. You know, speaking of that, the sexual analogies did not want to mess with the American people because. People came, you know, it was very clear that we busted our asses, to some more so than others, to get out and put this vote through and put Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in office come January 20th. And I feel like we need to stop, we need to be demanding better and more of these leaders that don't have the power or the money, but for the fact that we're paying into the system. I want to hear people like the lovely man that calls in a lot to your program last night. I don't want to hear him say I'm grateful. I want to hear him say I'm outraged at this pittance of a stimulus package. We need to be
or a relief bill.
This is unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
I agree with you about the. I need to cut you off, Darlene. And I don't know. I don't want. Don't be offended. I don't know what your economy is like, but sometimes when people operate on a certain economic level, any kind of balloon, 500, 600, 400, 300, 200, any kind of extra. That's positive. Is it fucking God's?
Arnold, we're talking here about the American people. I'm so old, I can remember when the American people said George W. Bush is the greatest president we've ever had in America because he just gave us $343.16 that I'm going to get to pay taxes on next year.
Right.
I mean,
Hold on, Darlene.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want to say. I busted my ass for 25 years in my business. I was making a six-figure income that there was 1 year where I almost reached the quote-unquote affluent.
Right.
I'm down now to a five-figure, low five figures. My business has taken more than a 50, I would say it's probably taken a 70 to 80% hit due to COVID. Okay, so wow. And I live in the very expensive state of Connecticut. So it's like I understand what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying, but again, I think we have been dumbed down, quote unquote, dumbed down. We've been brainwashed into thinking that any pittance is acceptable. We have been roundly psychological. There are some that have been saying that we're in. Kind of like a with Trump and I think the Republicans and our government generally, and I would put the Democrats in to this mix as well, that we're like in an abusive relationship. The American people deserve so much fucking more. We deserve so much better from these so-called elites.
And we, by God, have to learn to demand it somewhere along the way.
That's what I mean. Exactly. So
that's what the purpose of shows like this is. It is a platform for which we can iron out certain details as we're doing right now, and then work out the language for how to convince the rest of us to be on the side of righteousness. And I don't mean righteousness in some half-assed religious way. I mean righteousness in the sense that this is clearly what we need as a populace.
This is clearly what we need to have children, high school age kids, feel like they have a reason to graduate, a reason to be alive. We have taken, you know, I hear people say this phrase a lot. I have no reason to dream. Do you realize how fucked up it is to live in a society
where
people have no reason to dream?
When your young population is headed that way, you're headed to Gaza, okay? That's something I've talked about in regard to Central Appalachia for a very long time, that young people in Gaza, in Central Appalachia, southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, have more in common with people in Gaza than they do with a young person similar age in the so-called developed world. And it's a reality. Let me run into a couple of emails. Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx said, I wholeheartedly agree. The bill is crappy. It's a crap sandwich. But tell me how, if you were in Pelosi's shoes, you would have gotten better from a recalcitrant McConnell. Would you be willing to walk away from the table without anything? And I think Angelo's point is well taken insofar as if Nancy Pelosi walks away, then Nancy Pelosi, because of the nature of our for-profit media, is going to be the one who wears it, not Mitch McConnell.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but don't forget, too, Democrats are shitty at messaging, too.
Yeah, we suck.
And it's very, very clear that McConnell was suddenly Chris fucking Kringle because of Georgia. I'm sorry, but they've
absolutely.
They played it differently. Biden's team they've got some really great strategists there. Fucking tap his team. Sorry, Nancy, you don't know what you're doing. Talk to Biden's team. They're really good with the messaging and shit.
Well,
and
do you think that maybe there were some conversations that took place saying, you know, which helps you more, leaving it as it is or walking away or getting some little something out of somebody? She is a pro, and she's got a longstanding relationship with people like Biden. And I got to think that there were some consultations taking place. I'm guessing. I don't have any sort of insider information. But I can't help but point that out. Let me go to something Matt in San Francisco wrote, subject line, future leadership. I'm pretty far left of Pelosi. However, for an 80-year-old power broker, she's pretty damn progressive. I've always had an issue with the Democratic Party's haphazard approach to developing future leaders. The old guard seems to hold on to power, only giving it up to a super charismatic, unbelievably smart Dem that has an ability to energize the electorate. The Republicans, on the other hand, seem to understand how to develop junior members. No matter how crazy or unqualified, they push people to the front and give them the space to figure out how to lead. The Dems, on the other hand, seem to lurk in the weeds, waiting for junior members to make a mistake, and then they jump up and hue and cry in order to tear down the junior member that had the gall to make a misstep. We need to get our shit together and support each other in order to win. Being ideologically pure is nice, but rarely is the pure person the one who makes it to the top of the decision-making mountain. And I think Matt's got a lot of solid points in there.
He is dead on balls accurate.
Agree.
I would agree.
Completely agree, 100%.
Can I say something?
Yeah, Steve has joined us. Jump in, please, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
What's up, Steve?
Hey, Steve.
Hello. I think Pelosi sucks. She's awful. Just remember, you know, if she had any sense of what to do, she would have said to Mitch, "Hey, you need it. You need Georgia. Fuck you." But here's why she couldn't do that, Bob, because she told Trump and Mnuchin before the election 1.8 wasn't good enough. So here we have Ms. Nancy, Miss Strategist Extraordinaire, fucking up, and gave us, and we got half. Number one, number two, go clear back, and this is not my idea. This was on Sam Cedar, and I think he's right. Go clear back to, I believe it was the second tranche back in April, where someone said to her, "You got to get money for state and local governments." That was the point where McConnell wanted the PPP. They wanted more money for PPP. And what she should have done was said, You want PPP? Money for state and local. She fucked up there, too. And you can go back and you can see, I think it was Jim Acosta said, well, what about this? And she says, we're going to get money for state and local. We're going to get, guess what? Nothing. See, that's the real bombshell here. When, you know, states and localities can't borrow. They can't issue their own money. When it's not there, it's gone. Who's going who's going to start being laid off? Teachers, cops, firemen, public
hospitals, DOT workers.
Teachers. Because she fucked up. She's horrible. Oh, sorry, I'm getting a little bit too much here. She's horrible. Awful.
Well, she's definitely not the Queen of England, but let me just ask.
She's not a strategist.
I'm having fun with you, Steve, because I know how much you appreciate the constitutional monarchy in England. But I just, you know, I think when it comes right down to it all, based on what we're saying, what do the Democrats keep saying to us? They kind of keep stringing us along. This is just to tide us over. So assuming they gain power, that we gain power in the Senate, somehow we manage, you know, to get where we have that edge, and in the House, and of course we're getting the presidency, we're getting the Oval. That's where the what's the saying? The pudding is in the whatever it is.
Proof is in the pudding.
Proof is in the pudding. The proof
it's
is in the pudding.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating. That's actually what it is. And, but anyway,
there you go.
Is that the full one?
Where we need to demand. That's where we need to demand that they deliver. If this is just a quote unquote bridge to get us to the next real, you know, as Bob had said, a relief package, then that's where we need to not let up. This is why we need to say, this is a shit sandwich. This is pathetic what we're getting right now. This is unacceptable. Do not be grateful for it. Demand more. Because what they do in D.C. is, I'm sure if we were to see the avarice and the corruption and everything else, we wouldn't be sitting here saying that we're grateful to get the pittance that we're getting. This is unacceptable. We are being abused like a battered woman by our government. This has been going on for years and decades since the Reagan administration. And we have been kowtowed. We have been brainwashed. We have been led to think that any little bit that we get back from our government, which is our fucking money to begin with, is somehow a godsend, or not even deserving, like we're told by the Lindsey Grahams and the Mitch McConnells, and you know that you're not gonna work because we're giving you money.
I can't hear Lindsey Graham.
They're the ones that don't work. They don't work. I'm sorry, I'm yelling. They're the ones that don't work.
So Lindsey Graham, I can't hear his name without picturing him in a dress.
Let Darlene talk, please. I'm sorry to be a dick, but come on.
No, I'm sorry. What? I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. What was that, Arnold? About Lindsey?
I was just making a snarky comment. I'm really sorry. I said I can't hear Lindsey Graham's name without picturing him in a dress of recent. Yeah, he was. sorry.
No, that's fine. I guess what I'm saying is that they project onto us. They, in fact, the Mitch McConnells, the Lindsey Grahams, all of them, they are the ones that actually are the ones that do not work. And they turn around and they project it onto us and say, oh, because you're getting PUA and a stimulus and everything else, that, you know, you're the ones that are being disincentivized to work. You're like, you're not going to work. They're full of shit. The American people are the hardest working. I think we're among the hardest working people on the planet. And we, you know, the whole Puritan work ethic and the Calvinism and everything else, it's like to not work hard to earn your dollar is like a sacrilege. Whereas they sit in their ivory towers. I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Whose fault is it? I'm sorry to interrupt, but whose fault is it?
It's ours because we're – exactly. That's what I'm saying, Steve.
Yeah, and you know something else? Again, Nancy got – McConnell so outmaneuvered her for a number of reasons. First of all, because of he knows how inept she is. He also knows that that a 50-50 Senate isn't plus Vice President Harris is not really a majority for the Democrats. He knows about Joe Manchin, but what he also knows, Manchin is not the problem. He is a symptom of the problem. The problem is Chuck Schumer doesn't say, you want to fucking pull that shit? Fine. No chairmanship for you. No earmarks for you.
And unfortunately, that's not the game we play on this side. One of the reasons that Harry Reid was so beloved among his caucus when he was majority leader is because he pretty much let his members do as they wished, and he wouldn't arm twist. I heard that from numerous sources.
And I get it.
And the same is true of Schumer. On the other hand, with McConnell, you cross him at your peril.
And who? What famous Democrat was also like that?
LBJ.
LBJ. Fucking A right. And what did LBJ get? A 1964 Civil Rights Act, a 1965 Voting Rights Act.
Well, those are both after he's president, but...
I understand, but Bob, you know as well as I did that he had the ability to get on the phone and say, listen, you, I know where your bodies are buried. I know your skeleton's in the closet. It was because of his Senate experience that
on the other hand,
except when it came to Nixon, though, he didn't. He was afraid to reveal what Nixon was doing, right, Bob?
Yep.
In terms of the and that could have been his fatal flaw, just like Obama refused to tell Merrick Garland, put the fucking black robe on and head over to the Supreme Court.
The bottom line is the Democrats haven't played politics.
Exactly. They're not playing football.
Hold on. That's the problem, Steve. The Democrats do play politics. The Republicans play war.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
Better word than hardball, for sure.
I'd like to ask a question at that point, actually, because my question is, we're talking about the amount of this, the economic relief, and you know how we got here and why we got here. How come McConnell and Trump did not come up with an awesome package and do something that would have put them on the right side of history and possibly would have had them win a valid reelection? Why did we scuttle the whole thing so bad?
Why is Bezos popping into mind?
Oh, I think it was Pelosi.
It's money. You know, it's about
remember
it's about money.
She turned down
she's rich 1.8. Too. She's rich too.
She turned down double. Because Democrats
no,
are
no, no.
so
hold on.
Bad
whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on. She did not necessarily turn down double. There was Mitch McConnell never walked out and said, yeah, I want to do $1.8 trillion.
Bob, if she would have said to Mnuchin, and Trump, okay, fine, I'm going to call your bluff. Bring it. Okay, I agree. There is no downside for the Democrats there because then it pits Trump against McConnell. And if it doesn't pass, then the Democrats can blame McConnell and Trump. If it does pass, they can say, look what we did. Look what we gave you.
Yeah, but see, what I was asking was, why didn't they go even – why did Trump
– They did. That's my point.
Well, let's. This has turned into a Titanic Tuesday on the front porch. Al fresco. Because
one thing, real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Bob. The other thing too is, you know, I haven't heard this kerfuffle about AOC.
Well, I'd like to go back to that for a minute, just to lay out some facts.
I'm going to say something relating to that. You know, this thing about you know, if you support if you support somebody who primaries a Democrat, you know, expect it. Remember, Pelosi supported the Kennedy who ran against Ed Markey, the more liberal / progressive candidate for Senate in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And it even went further than that. The Democrats said, if you support a primary challenger, the whole infrastructure said no money, no advertising, none of this. She's a hypocrite too.
Well, there is a shade of nuance. I'm not defending her, but there's a shade of nuance between taking one of your own, heading out the door and saying Godspeed, good luck, I endorse you, in a race in the other house. What is at hazard here? And granted, you'll never catch me defending Henry Cuellar. He's fucking awful. I mean, he might as well be a Republican. But among other things, and this is just learning. She's just now been reelected to her second term. Okay, mistakes will be made, mm-hmm. And when you run around threatening to primary the guy who's very likely going to be the next speaker, Hakeem Jeffries, expect Hakeem Jeffries to have a moment for you tucked in his pocket somewhere. And she badly wanted that position. And like I said, she had the blessing. You know, it was a seat that had been occupied by Elliot Engel. He's gone. And she had the blessing of Gerald Nadler, but she threatened to come after Hakeem Jeffries, and she did go after Henry Cuellar. Now,
but isn't it about the tensions in the system, though, Bob? The tensions, because Republicans can go ahead and they can go to the extreme.
Sure,
AOC said that. She said that in a town hall meeting with the fella you've had, Chris. I'm blowing his name from MSNBC. He's a really good
Hayes,
guy.
Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes. Yeah, Chris Hayes.
Chris
Hayes.
Hayes. She said, "Look, you know," and she is in a comfortable position. She has a very progressive district she's representing, and she said, "Hey, the people have tasked me. The people of my district have tasked me with going all out." And she said, "And I may only have one term." And this was, you know, in her first term. But I think we need the AOCs to pull on that opposite end.
Sure, absolutely. It's
and then you come to
It's the whole Overton. It's the Overton window theory. You drag the Overton window to where you want it to be so that you will actually wind up somewhere you can tolerate.
That's the Green New Deal. And I think we need that. I think we need that quote-unquote extreme, which, you know, I was being facetious, and Arnold was you know, talking about, well, why is the program important? I know the program is important, that the, you know, head-on radio is vitally important. And I was more or less, it was a rhetorical thing. You know, we need to draw it through what is quote-unquote considered the extreme is really not. But we're so brainwashed, I think, in this society and this culture. We need the AOCs to have that counterbalance. It's kind of like Ralph Nader without the Ralph Nader.
it's like Ralph Nader.
Staying within the system.
It's like Ralph Nader if Ralph Nader had actually run as a Democrat. I mean, there are going to be there are always going to be primary fights. And the weird thing that happens on the right, on the Republican side, is that you always get primaried from further right. Okay, nobody can, you cannot win a Republican primary by saying, this guy, with maybe the possible exception of Steve Cantaloupe's King, you cannot win with by saying, this guy's too extreme. All the, who was the goober who primaried Eric Cantor and knocked him out? And this guy was, what, second or third most powerful member in the Republican House caucus. He got primaried from the right. And what AOC is trying to do is replicate the same concept, primarying from the left. But don't,
right, because, but
don't expect anybody who has been the recipient of that to like it. And revenge is a dish that is best served ice cold. And I mean, I would have liked to have had her. I would have liked to have had her on that committee.
Me too. But don't forget, an AOC extreme is different than a Jim Jordan.
Sure. I was not trying to. Okay? I was not trying to set up an equivalence there.
Well, I kind of am, because clear, you know, Jim Jordan's full of shit. What's his name? The crazy one there that.
Which one?
Yeah, exactly, Steve. I mean, it's sort.
You said the crazy one. I'm like,
gonna have to have a little more detail than that.
Oh God, the bald one there.
Louis Asparagus Gohmert.
That's it, Gohmert. They're pulling shit out of their asses. There, it's a QAnon. You know, it's QAnon. What's led to QAnon? Okay, when AOC does her stuff, her shit is based in research and fact. And it's like, wow, it's brilliant. Okay, so that's viewed, quote unquote, as extreme when it's not. You know,
let me ask.
So we're
But the other problem that obtains here, Darlene, is
I'm disappointed in Hakeem Jeffries. Just saying, but
I understand, but we also run up against the realities of something I've talked about before. I guess Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was supporting a primary challenger in Henry Cuellar's district that was far more in line with her values and ideals and goals than Henry Cuellar. I mean, if you actually just voted Democrat once in a while, you'd be more of a Democrat than Henry Cuellar. But you got to take into account, because I saw it happen here. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or someone cut from her mold, it's there's a lot of America she couldn't be elected dog catcher in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I get that.
And
but again, maybe that's okay to have that tension in the system that she offers.
Sure.
On our side.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Have the tension, but somewhere along the way you got to run. In a way, I felt like this particular story was sort of emblematic of the idea that she was running as if she was a 15-term incumbent who had been 30 years in the House.
So what she?
In other words,
she's running
as if it's 30 years from now. And 30 years from now, she may be the moderate, okay, as America changes. But
okay, but I'm fine with what she's doing. But what, Bob, I'm not trying to be a bitch here. What should she have done, a fucking bitch, like she was called? What should she have done then? Should she have stayed out of it? I'm not trying to challenge
maybe,
you. I'm just curious.
No, maybe that's the answer. Maybe there are unwritten rules and there are ideas of decorum. And one of the ideas of decorum is you don't go in and campaign against one of your fellow members from your own party. Now, you know,
What if it was Joe Manchin, though, Bob?
I've already seen that happen. It was a disaster. It earned tons. No. This was a primary of Joe Manchin, And it was dead on arrival. It was run by people from out of West Virginia who came into West Virginia looking for somebody to run, looking specifically for a woman to run against Joe Manchin for fundraising purposes. She never had the candidate.
I have to leave.
So oh, okay.
I just wanted to say, I'm sorry about that. I didn't realize what time it was, but I'm going to go. I'm going to listen because this is really good.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
You know, Steve, I got to bail too. I just want to thank you for, for calling in, Steve. And, it's okay for yelling at me. I deserved it. And, cool chatting with you.
Okay, I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, take care, Steve.
Love you, Steve. Keep texting me. Love you. Bye.
I will. Bye-bye.
Arnold, if you got a roll, I've enjoyed the conversation. I always do immensely.
Thank you, brother. I am going to roll.
Okay, we'll talk soon, man.
Thanks, Arnold. Nice talking with you, Arnold. Thank you.
And if we don't
darling. Great to talk with you.
If we don't talk again, give your little girl a great, great, great big hug and kiss for Christmas, okay? I hope she has a wonderful Christmas.
All right. Will do. Love you guys. Good night.
Love you, man. See ya.
Love ya.
So what happened here, just to recap, in 2016, Bernie won every county in West Virginia, and some people who did not understand the political dynamics of that looked at that bare number and said, woo, there's a progressive revolution taking place in West Virginia. Horseshit. I'm one of the most progressive people in the state, and, you know, horseshit. Yeah. Because what happened was Donald Trump came to Charleston and said,
and I want all of you to go, don't worry about voting for me, I'm going to win here, I'm going to win it all, but I want you to go and vote for Bernie in the primary.
And they did. Because this state still has a higher Democratic registration percentage than Republican. And independents are big, too. And independents can vote in the Democratic primary. And they all went and did as they were told. And so Bernie won all 55 counties. And so people who had been part of the Bernie campaign in 2016 and some people from outside said, hey, let's go to West Virginia because all the progressives hate Joe Manchin. And we'll run this huge hustle, and we'll find a patsy to run for office, and we'll pay her to run for office, and we'll fundraise on her back for campaigns outside West Virginia. And that's what happened. And it was people who had no more idea about how West Virginia politics works than a hog knows about the workings of a nuclear reactor. And she garnered 35% of the vote against Joe Manchin in the primary, and that was supposed to be some sort of earth-shattering event, but of course it wasn't. And so then the same group came back, ran the fundraising hustle again in 2020, and ran her against the other senator as the Democratic nominee, and I mean she got pasted to the wall, okay? And she was sitting there saying it was like AOC had written her script for her. And she got whacked. I mean, she got steamrolled. She got destroyed. And I guess what I'm trying to say, Darlene, is that there's no such thing as a one size fits all progressive. And maybe that's what we're figuring out here.
And I, that's totally logical. I will not gainsay you on that at all. I guess the question is, because we talk about, you know, we the people, you know, in order to form a more perfect union, we talk about evolution and progressivism and progressing.
Don't forget socialism. We like to talk about socialism.
I guess the question is, did any ideas that this candidate that they put up that gained no traction, did any of her ideas gain even a little bit of advancement?
Not that wasn't already there.
and West Virginia is unique, okay? And I guess if you can make it in West Virginia, I guess if you can gain traction in West Virginia, you can gain it anywhere. So you're right in the trenches. I guess what I'm saying is that it seems as though, okay, I'm thinking about, for some reason, Dennis Kucinich is coming to mind. Dennis Kucinich brought up the concept of a nonprofit healthcare system many years ago when he was still in office. And even I was shocked at that and thought, oh, no, that doesn't make any sense, no. And then over time, I assimilated that idea. And again, we're all brainwashed. I'm sorry. In this country, many of us are brainwashed.
And understand.
But I began to think, wow, he's right.
Well, see, and that's exactly what happens. So we credit Bernie with coming up with the idea of everybody gets to go to the doctor when they're sick. But actually, Dennis Kucinich was back there much earlier saying we need to let everybody go to the doctor when they're sick and we can find the money for it, just shaking out the couch cushions at the Pentagon. But even Dennis was coattailing on something that John Conyers had been doing for years, and that is introducing a Medicare for All bill every Congress.
Right. And
I mean, the idea is out there. It goes all the way back to Harry Truman.
Well, it goes back to the Puritan, you know.
But I mean, legislative efforts to make this happen go back to Harry Truman, because he saw what other nations were doing, you know, Marshall Plan, things like that. They were putting in national health care in order to take care of a war ravaged country, whether it be Germany or the UK. The UK most famously came up with the NHS, the National Health Service. The British people fucking love it. And Harry Truman said, you know, we got to do something similar here. And one of the and the pushback once that godforsaken, useless, what was it, 110th Congress, the do nothing 110th Congress or something like that. I forget what the actual number was, but they said Harry Truman's trying to turn America communist. And everybody talks about how Eisenhower was the rational Republican. We remember him so fondly now. He was a Republican you could trust. But he, and I think Scott in San Diego and I had this conversation, Eisenhower went hammer and tongs as often as he could. We cannot have socialized medicine. We won't have any doctors anymore. And it's been the same fight for, oh God, do the math, 72 years. And we're still fighting it. Let me jump in
well,
here.
Well, it harkens back to rugged. I mentioned rugged individualism.
Yeah, pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Of rugged individualism, and yeah, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. But I feel like we need those, as imperfect as they are.
Yeah.
The Ralph Naders and maybe even now the AOCs.
Oh, I don't want to be.
Her heart is in the right place. We need those counterbalances to try to bring us scratching and working our way up the hill, scraping and scrapping up that hill. You know, to a better.
Yeah, I don't want to be. I don't want to be perceived in the least as criticizing AOC.
I'm not.
But let me interrupt just for a second because we're running out of program and we've got $295 bucks to do in fundraising. I don't mean running out. We got 45 minutes left, but we got $295 in fundraising, and it would be great if we could knock some of that out so we're not looking at $595 tomorrow when we're doing a Christmas special. So. That's there. If you can help out, please do. The other thing is that Todd in South Carolina, Stan, has patiently waited for a while, and I just wanted to get him into the conversation, too. Are you there, Todd?
Oh, my God. Oh.
Hey, everybody. I'm here.
Good, good.
Hi, Todd. Oh, my God.
Darlene, how are you?
This is like the creme de la creme. Todd, good. How are you, my friend? It's so lovely to hear you.
You too, and this was a conversation from the ages, you know, for the ages. that's why I called in. There's just a lot going on.
So glad you did.
Can I say just four things I want to say? Let's start with recent and move back maybe. To me, what was nice about President Truman is that he grew to be a great president. He knew he needed to learn some things, and he did that, and he knew how to listen to people. He wasn't perfect, but if we look back at what he got started, and some of his ideas, I think that if we had more people who were in high positions who were capable of introspection and the capacity to understand they're not perfect and to grow, I think that things would be better. That's just what I'm talking about, that personal quality. That's just my take on him. What really sparked me is this conversation. Listening, when you guys really drilled down between AOC and Nancy, what you guys are talking about really is the present and the future of American politics right now, as it happens in the midst of all this crisis. I'm going to push back a little bit. I really was trying to get in when everybody was there, Arnold, Steve. It doesn't matter. It was a great conversation you guys had. But, Nancy Pelosi, to me, she's excellent at what she does. Now, people make mistakes, and Steve is right, that she could have gotten more money earlier on. However, when you're dealing with Mitch McConnell, he's not trustworthy. You don't know what he has in his bag of Russian tricks. There's a lot of other moving parts. But Nancy, we all know this. She knows how to count votes. She understands the system. There's a reason that she is that old and a woman, and she came back and got that position. There's a reason. But AOC, and I'm almost done, AOC, you see, she has the passion, but it is dangerous out there in the House and the Senate. And that is her first, and she's just going into her second term. And I don't know that she has the right people around her to show her the ropes. See, it's tricky. There are potholes that she doesn't even know about.
Well, technically, Todd, it's her third term as Speaker.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That begins next month.
Okay. Thank you. Well, do you feel that I'm speaking out of turn on some of my takes on these things?
No.
You said you had four points though, Todd, and I'm missing them.
I did. The fourth one is that we need a frank lunch. We need people starting to wake up to this. We need people to get our message out in a more efficient manner. Because what we're doing now is not working. That was point number four.
I agree. I agree 100%. But I do. And I don't know why the whole situation about what happened on the Capitol steps with AOC and the fella that called her a fucking bitch is coming to mind right now. I'm not sure why. She didn't say anything that was awful. She spoke the truth and was called out on it. So there's a lot of things, you can't overlook, the fact that she's a woman and a Latinx. I think that's also a factor as well. She is quite brilliant. So, I'm not sure I necessarily agree. She doesn't have the right people around her. I think she was tasked with a mandate from a very progressive district, and she's doing her job because she basically said that to Chris Hayes. She said, look, I'm going all out. I'm going for broke. And I think that's okay when you look at what Republicans do. They don't think twice. That's kind of why I did the juxtaposition between her, between AOC and Jim Jordan. Jim mm-hmm. Jordan's a crackpot, and he was, he was from that whole Tea Party thing phase, right? I think he was from the Tea Party. He kind of rose out of that.
Well, on paper, I agree with you in that, you know, when you're a House representative, that's the direct voice of the people, supposedly. You know, they're the brawlers as opposed to the Senate.
Right.
They're supposed to be genteel. And it's
that's
the direct
most
voice
democratic.
Of the people. Right. And so she's, and I mean, you can definitely make the argument she is representing the ideals and interests of her constituency. And that's what she was
saying. Yeah,
she's
doing her job.
Well. Right. Now, but, you know, Washington's a funny place. And I have to agree. I don't know who said it, but, you know, you have to be careful who you lash out at. Because it's complicated. I don't know. It's complicated. You know, she was on Bernie's coattails. Very popular. And remember, what makes AOC popular and powerful in her way, like Bernie was, is the same thing that got, you know, Trump popular. People are tired of the system. They're sick and tired. And they have just two, you know, opposing views of how to fix it. But people wanted radical change. And that's, you know, now, look at the mess we're in now. So I don't know if I'm stepping on your argument. Oh, if I am, I apologize.
No, you know, I guess one question I did have, and I felt very, like, about Hakeem Jeffries. As, mm-hmm. And I don't know if Arnold is white. You know, Steve, I've seen photos of, you know, we're all white people talking here. I like Hakeem
really?
Jeffries, but
yeah,
but,
we're not all Todd.
No, I wasn't talking about Todd. I know Todd is African American. I know that, but I felt when it was Arnold, me, Steve, and you, Bob, you asked about Hakeem Jeffries, and I felt kind of like I don't feel like I'm in a position to say anything. I don't know if you're Todd. I don't know if you're aware about what Bob had said about Hakeem Jeffries. And I'm a little stunned that he's kind of embedded with. And if I'm misquoting you, Bob, I apologize. That he's embedded with Wall Street.
Well, I thought it's a really terrific replacement
for.
Well, the
Nancy.
Other the
but,
other. If
Todd,
you,
what do you think?
Darlene, if I can interrupt her just
Bob
1 minute.
Jump in and I'll tell you what I think. But Bob is itching.
I'm not. The Wall Street doesn't bug me nearly so much as his ties to oil and gas, because that whole set piece against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in many ways was people who are intimately associated with the oil and gas lobby, whether it's Hakeem Jeffries or Henry Cuellar. Or any of the other members. I mean, because by the time all was said and done, and the vote count was taken place on that, it wasn't like AOC got beat in a squeaker. She got stomped. It was 46 to 13 or 43 to 16, something like that.
For that committee.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
All right.
And I guess I just wanted to know, Todd, your take on Hakeem, because he seems like a decent guy, and I, you know, and as a white woman, I don't want to be commenting, but I just, what's your take on him? I don't know if you're aware of all of this, or...
I'll say this. I know a lot of people that you would recognize. I don't make a big deal about it, but I know some folks. But I do not know him. I don't know his circle. But I know the area, and I know that he's a senator and he's black. And this
is member of the House.
That area, that there is no way in hell you are going to be a black man and get into the Senate from North Jersey, and somebody is not.
Todd, hold on.
Yes?
Just a quick correction. He's a member of the House of Representatives, and he's from Queens. And he's from Queens.
I'm thinking about someone else.
You're thinking about Cory Booker.
I'm thinking, yes.
Oh, Cory Booker.
What I'm thinking about. Yeah, from Newark.
Okay.
Right. That's, I'm sorry. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
And
I was thinking of Hakeem.
Hakeem Jeffries has a hell of a backstory. His grandfather moved, or his family moved, from Georgia to New York after, I think, his granddaddy was lynched by the Klan. And, you know, he has been unafraid to call out racists like Donald Trump, and I admire that. But that's sort of red meat for folks like us. I mean, we've been talking about Donald Trump being the son of a Klansman for 4 years. But and that's I mean, I read a post in the Intelligencer from New York Magazine. And they talked about that, and they also talked about how, you know, every MLK day, it's a very busy day for him, and he goes from church to rally to church to rally to the parade to, and he is a very good, very astute politician. But the operative word there is, of course, politician. And I don't.
Oh wait, he's the guy who lives in Queens. He lives in Queens, doesn't he?
I don't dislike him, but the reason I brought all of this up early on in the conversation, Darlene, is because I didn't like the idea of Nancy Pelosi getting all the grief when Nancy Pelosi wasn't even remotely involved in that committee process.
I get what you're saying. I'm actually quite stunned. I'm not doubting you about Hakeem Jeffries. I guess, I don't know, I guess I was wrong about him. My sense of him is he's good. He's a good person.
No, I'm not saying he's not.
As a white person, I don't want to comment. I don't know his situation. And I remember you saying that you thought he would be in line for Speaker of the House to replace Nancy.
Yeah, that seems to be the conventional wisdom, yes.
So I don't know what to make of that. And I think, you know, and Todd, I like Cory Booker. I think he's a good man, too. I
feel stupid.
Don't.
But let me offer up something that just came in from Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx. And Angelo is an astute observer of the political world there. New York City politics hasn't changed much from the days of Tammany Hall. He's still, Hakeem Jeffries is still a product of the Queens Democratic machine. AOC bucked the Bronx Democratic machine and got away with it. That's why she's not getting any help. But the truth of the matter is, Gerald Nadler stood there and said, cool by me, you want the seat, you should have it. It was Hakeem Jeffries and people from out of state who, and somebody reached out, and considering she's from Long Island, the New York delegation, you can only speculate as to who, but somebody reached out to the backbencher who had never evinced any interest in that seat before, and the next thing you know, she's trouncing AOC 43-16 or 46-13.
Hmm. So, yeah, something is...
Some nasty-ass politics.
Yeah. Can I...
And just one last thing, because, Matt in San Francisco offers on, as far as Nancy Pelosi is concerned, I think she's underappreciated. And Matt would know because Matt's been a San Franciscan for quite a long time, so he's well familiar with her political record and her political history. I think she's underappreciated. She's negotiated with an arsonist holding a flaming Molotov cocktail. She's able to get something out of him and not have the place burnt down. That is a feat in and of itself.
Yeah, and I mean, I would agree. I mean, when I got into the conflict with my friend over this, I do think that Nancy's not happy. Personally, I think she's not happy with this agreement. I can see it with this stimulus package. I think I can see it in her face, in her eyes, that she's not happy with it. While Todd is here, I wanted to bring up Bill Barr. because I know Todd and I have often talked about how dangerous he is, and he's on his way out. Thank goodness. And I found it fascinating that he brought up the Lockerbie terrorist attack on the plane that crashed. And that I guess they had, after 32 years, they had finally, I guess, filed charges against the maker of the bomb that brought down Lockerbie. And that was the big case that Robert Mueller was involved with when he worked under Bill Barr as an assistant attorney general, or whatever the hell they call him, in the Justice Department. And that was like one of the big cases that Mueller worked on as a very young 44-year-old attorney. And I found it fascinating that he ended like one of his last press conferences with bringing up Lockerbie. And I'm wondering if he's trying to reach out to Mueller in a way and say, hey, you know, we're still friends, right?
What if Mueller will say no?
What if I told you,
Darlene, that it was part of a counterbalance?
Oh, yeah. Coming from Bill Barr?
Yeah, because because I don't know if you know this, because the story just broke a few minutes ago. But he telegraph everything. So Bill Barr's out there talking about Lockerbie, and as you point out, Mueller was intimately associated with the prosecution of that, and so we're going to feel good about that, because moments ago, Nitwit Nero pardoned two more people who Mueller prosecuted.
Who?
George who? George Papadopoulos and Alex van der Zwaan.
That to me is just bullshit. That's building up to something. Because van der Zwaan, he only spent, two fucking weeks in jail?
Yeah. Well, Papadopoulos didn't exactly do 30 days in the hole either.
Exactly. So he's building up to something. Oh, geez. Wow. Okay. So
along the way, he pardoned four homicidal maniac murderers from Blackwater who were involved, one of whom was involved in the slaughter of 17 innocent Iraqis, and were vigorously prosecuted by the Department of Justice that really wasn't interested in prosecuting Americans out of the Iraq, for crimes against Iraqis. But this guy's conduct was so awful that they prosecuted him, and he was due in life. And Nitwit Nero just gave him a walk.
And I guess, this is why... And it's fascinating, and maybe it shouldn't be surprising that Biden.
Well, but hold on, it gets better. He also pardoned three members of Congress who were prosecuted and convicted.
Nunez.
No, Duncan.
Bedhead. Oh, this just smells like Russia now. Oh my God.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and that's interesting. That's interesting because huggable, cuddleable, lovable, snuggleable. Vlad Putin signed a law into effect in Russia in the last day or so, saying that no former president of the Russian Republic could ever be prosecuted for any crime. But Nitwit Nero pardoned Duncan Hunter, who threw. Remember, he threw his wife under the bus. Chris Collins of New York. And batshit crazy Steve Stockman of Texas. And Duncan Hunter was just on the cusp of beginning his 11 months in the stir. And Collins is presently due in 26 months after a guilty plea in 2019 of making false statements to the FBI. And Steve Stockman was serving 10 years on charges of fraud and money laundering. He also pardoned two former members of the Border Patrol who gunned down a so-called drug trafficker. His sentence had been commuted by W, and now he's just out and out pardoned. So
you're going to say something,
Todd?
Go, Todd.
Yeah, well, just actually two things now. Remember, the first person he pardoned, I think, was Sheriff, the greasy Sheriff Arpaio.
Who was it?
I mean, who defied the law. And, you know, a typical law-breaking law enforcement person. That was the first person he pardoned. And now look how he's ending. You know, this is why he has to really go. I know it's not possible. But this is why he's so dangerous. This is why there was a duty to warn. Okay? I mean, he would pardon the coronavirus. This guy's out of control.
You're right.
But,
that deserves
virus,
a cowbell, Bob.
That I sent you Friday, Bob. I said he's going to mutate. Do you remember that?
He would pardon the coronavirus.
Yeah. This is what we need to talk about. I'm serious. Look, I mean, you know, the politics, that's, you know, it's life, it's esoteric in a way, and it's not. But, you know, this is just simple cellular biology. Viruses mutate. They have to replicate. And the danger, the big danger of this particular virus is that now we know, like SARS, this is a kind of SARS, but SARS primarily was in your respiratory system. We know now that this virus can attack almost every system in the body.
Yeah.
Right? And why that's important, just think about it. It's really simple when you really think about it. The permutations and combinations of the types of variants or mutations that can come from this are astounding. Because what can have everybody, first of all, everyone is different. So when that virus gets in everyone's body, right, there's a different way it can mutate. That's number one. Number two, we're talking about a new virus. This is new. So this is like the Wild West. But when you talk about different systems and organs, the reason some viruses and diseases attack certain organs is because there are markers. And the virus is smart enough to understand where the markers are, you know, the vulnerable areas. This is what we're seeing. I mean, your brain, your kidneys, your liver, your lungs. This is going to be a hard, you know, now maybe the RNA a vaccine will work because it is, you know, like genetic modification. So it's modifying how the virus replicates. But I don't want to overspeak, but I'm just saying that this is just simple biology. And Bob, you know, I know you have to know this. You live with a medical professional. Does she talk about this?
Yeah.
Oh, constantly, yes. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Why isn't everyone sick? Okay.
You put it beautifully, Todd. I mean, that's just, oh my God, that is like poetry, the way you put it on a horrible subject. You're right, because that is the frightening thing, because, you know, when FDR talked about fear, there's mm-hmm. nothing but fear itself. We, you know, none of us know how this could affect us, because it could be neurologically based. You just don't know how it could hit you on a neurological level. It could hit you on a brain level. You know, as somebody who's struggling every day with a muscular disease, it's like, you know, I can well appreciate how that impacts one's life. And it's like, I don't want this wouldn't want something like that on top of muscular. And it does affect the muscles. I mean, it could affect that. You don't know how it's going to hit you. It's so, it's so seriously dangerous that I think that's why some people are so reckless and careless about it. They're just like, they're so freaked out at the possibilities of what it could do to you. They're almost like, let's have a party with 300 people and, you know, Russian
right.
roulette. And it's kind of just this fatalism. It's a weird.
And you know, there are people.
I just want to make sure that everyone, just because we have a vaccine, you know, for right a second, the worst is yet to come. I hate to say it, but it's the truth. The worst is yet. Do you understand that our courthouse, we haven't had court now in over a month. The city hall is closed. It's been closed to the public. And people are still not wearing masks. People are getting tired, mm-hmm. and they're not doing what they're supposed to do. So I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a downer. I'm just saying that we have to be vigilant.
No. Because
right.
I think I agree with you, Todd, and I think we're at a point where we have to. I mean, the reality is what I say every night. The best way to stay safe is to stay home. But some people are in positions where that simply cannot happen. And it sucks. Whether it's because you're an essential worker and you got to go to work every day, or, you know, you got to keep the lights on, or you have to be the one who goes out and does the shopping and makes sure that the fridge is stocked and everything. Because one of the things that's most terrible about all of this is that there are people who have done all the right things and still wind up with it.
And that's why I,
horrifying.
The people who are truly on the front lines or the essential workers, they're the ones that should be getting $20 million a year, not the actors and actresses in Hollywood that get paid to be something that they're not. They get to pretend to be something that they're not. You know, and it's sort of like this is where it all kind of comes back to this whole idea of people being irate and saying, are you shitting me? 600 stimulus? That's not acceptable. That is unacceptable.
I'm so glad you brought that back, Darlene. That
stimulus
conversation. We have to shout about that. That's actually almost
exactly.
more stress.
Exactly.
What are you going to do with, like, which bill am I not going to pay? Like, I have to go to work. I'm overexposed. I'm stay sick.
Yes.
I'm like, if I can go 2 days without vomiting, that's a good day. And
there you go.
Because this is South Carolina. You know, they want us to work till we drop dead.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the 400-year economic model, Todd.
Well, it's sort of epitomized and encapsulated in West Virginia, what you've been talking about for years, Bob. Jobs. It's all about jobs. No, it's not. It's about people's health and well-being. And, you know, you talk about the... You know, we're not even scratching the surface on the psychological ramifications of everything that has happened. And I know Todd's into that too, in terms of the psychological fallout of what this has done for generations. This is sort of our. I don't know. It's the fact that it's starting to take more people per day than what happened in 9/11, and that more people have been lost to this virus in our country than in World War II?
We're almost there.
We're almost there. It's like, and in a sense, and this is what's even more frightening, we're kind of lucky that it's a virus as opposed to a superbug, which was one of the other great scenarios that, you know, the World Health Organization was worried about. And we got a superbug that there's no antibiotic, there's no, you know, there's nothing for that.
That's a great point, Darlene. That's a
right,
great
and where is
the,
where
that it could mutate down, you know, to be less, you know, we just don't know yet.
Well, the odds are that it will mutate downwards, mm-hmm. so as to be a more successful bug, and that way it'll just run around us forever. But a bug that kills like this is generally not evolutionarily successful. Let me share a couple of notes.
Right, because
Right. I need to say because we are running out of time. Thank you to Frank. Frank got us down to $270 to go on fundraising for the evening. Thank you, Frank. And a note from Jude in the Great Northwest, subject line: Darlene. Sounds like winter solstice came to visit Darlene. She's keenly focused, and I can sense a particular passion rising. The feminine energy of winter solstice. Astute and diverse interchange, Bob and all. Be well. And that's from Jude.
Love you, Jude. That love you. Love you, love you. I love the winter solstice. And unfortunately, where I live, it's always cloudy whenever there is a celestial event. So unfortunately, as much as I tried to look for it, could not see Jupiter and Jupiter and Saturn merging.
Yeah, the convergence
last night. Oh God, that was just
Well, it's still going on to a certain extent, and in fact, I just got a photograph a few minutes ago from a dear friend down in one of my favorite places on the planet, the Alabama Gulf Coast, and it's a night shot, but you can see the outline of palm trees and Jupiter and Saturn in the distance up in the nighttime sky, and it's like, yeah.
Can you post it? Post it somewhere so we can like live vicariously. You know.
I'll see if I can get permission. I got to share a note from Jeremy in Vermont as well, because this goes to what we've been talking about. Subject line: COVID in the body. It definitely affects the muscle system as well. People are having to learn how to walk again if they survive the worst and don't lose said limbs from the Trump fucking virus. By the way, Bob, where's our nightly fundraising at? Well, we're at 270 to go for the evening. Thanks for asking, Jeremy.
Well, you know, I'm already there on the muscular end of things. I don't want to add to it at all, but I've been holed up in my home, and yeah, that's where I'm staying.
Hey, Darlene, I think. Let me tell you, I have to just piggyback on what Jude, the empath, just said. And you are a strong, vibrant woman, and you have keen insights. You know, I think everybody who listens to this program.
Thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you. That gives me the confidence to continue forward, because it's been a whacked out year. Let me tell you.
Oh yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Todd. That means the world. Can I ask you guys about the $2,000? I'd love to get your impression. I'm sure you've been seeing the headlines that supposedly Trump wanted to give stimulus, like a stimulus check of $2,000,
yeah,
to everyone, but supposedly his aides were saying no. I think that's dead on. We should be at least getting $2,000, but I'm wondering
that should
what's
be
going
monthly,
on with that story.
Darlene. That should be monthly.
Oh, I agree. I think that
in the civilized world,
the
it is.
That ran, yeah, who was the fellow that ran for president that said that?
Oh, Andrew Yang. Yeah,
Yang.
But he was talking in terms of universal basic income. I'm just talking about for the duration and in the immediate aftermath of the pandemic, everybody should have been getting $2,000 a month, and that's not going to make anybody rich. It's not like anybody's going to challenge Jeff Bezos because they got $2,000 a month.
Please explain why that did not happen, because it defies common sense. I mean, it does. If you do what they tell you,
well, because,
to do,
because
if you've
been
this, around someone who has the virus, you're supposed to stay
because
home,
this,
but they're not
this,
gonna pay you.
Because this nation right. has a nasty case of the Puritans.
Right, exactly. That's what I was saying. You know, that whole thing about rugged individualism. And I disagree with you, Bob. I would go, I agree with Yang. I think we should have a universal basic income. And I think he undercut it by $1,000.
I'm not disagreeing. I just think he was a mite low.
Exactly. Thank you. And can you imagine if we, you know, because really, it's our money anyway, you know. The money that they gave. Look, Bezos.
Well, I mean, for fuck's sake, George W. Bush said it. I'm giving you $343.16 because it's your money. I mean, he campaigned in 2000 on his compassionate conservatism horseshit. It's your money. I'm going to give it back to you. We don't need no lockbox. That Al Gore's crazy.
And that was hilarious back then. I'm like, is he fucking kidding me? 300 and whatever? That's nothing. That is nothing. Like the 600, most people are going to take that $600 stimulus. That's not even going to pay for a vast majority of people's rent for 1 month.
Have you guys seen these food lines?
Yeah, the food lines.
We're in the depression. I mean, the bottom is about to fall out. Yeah. People are about to lose their cars. They're about to lose their domiciles. I mean, I just don't understand what they think is going to happen to people. You know, I try not to think about it too much. Yeah. You know, I'm just thankful I have a warm bed. It's not about me, but I'm just saying, like, literally, this is how basic we are now. You better be happy that if you have a roof and a warm bed, you better be happy.
Exactly.
Because there's a whole lot of people who don't have shit right now.
Exactly, but you're aware. And that... You're aware that that's the dynamic, that is where we've been brainwashed into, which is why I said in the beginning, you know, it was Scott from San Diego. He's lovely. He said, you know, I'm grateful to get to... No, Scott, be pissed off.
And see, no name.
Be pissed off you're only
that
getting
charming,
600.
Wonderful gentleman. Sorry.
No, I said he's a wonderful gentleman. Did I not say that? He's a wonderful, wonderful gentleman. Scott,
right.
Be pissed off.
Names.
I'm sorry, what?
We were not using names.
Oh, I'm sorry. Be pissed off. Be pissed off you're only
right.
getting $600. Be angry. You deserve more than that. We all deserve more than that. We should be in a situation where we're saying, this is not acceptable. This is not
well, let me ask you guys this. Let me ask you this, because we're on the same page right now, what we're talking about. I fail to understand how the National Guard is not called out. I mean, I remember when poor folk could get, like, what was a big, like, coffee can of peanut butter, some cheese, potable water. You know, in other words, you want to be cheap. You don't want to pay people to stay home. Okay, let's compromise. You pay people's bills, their power bill. And, you know, you work out something so they can keep paying their loans unless the banks stop calling in loans. And you make sure people can eat. It's very basic. I mean, we're fighting over food. We're fighting over people eating. There's no health care. So the next best thing you can do is try to get fresh fruits and juice and yeah. fresh meat, which is those are the most expensive things in the supermarket. So, you know, they can't have it both ways, every way. Unless am I out of line here?
No, not at all.
No, but you know what? And let me ask you, because I've got the two of you here. I don't think it's that unusual that we're still waiting to hear who President-elect Biden is going to select as his Attorney General.
I would not be surprised if he does not make that announcement until after January 5th.
Oh, that's interesting because, you know, that's to me the seminal appointment because the Justice Department is fucked up. It's messed up. It has been disintegrating. Since the Obama administration, sadly. And I was just curious as to, you know, I wanted to ask either one of you if you had your dream pick, who it would be.
I honestly don't know. I'd like, what you usually find is that your attorney general is somebody with experience inside the federal system. I like somebody like Letitia James. I want somebody with some damn fight in them. But
she doesn't have upward mobility there.
Well, I mean, I don't know what her experience is inside the federal system. But the other part of it is, though, it's not just the Attorney General. The Attorney General, I guess, sets the tone. But I can't help thinking that the two people that are going to be the deputy who's going to be running the show after Bill Barr's departure, he's going to be that for some reason, because otherwise he'd do an acting. And what I'm more concerned about, and I think you alluded to it, Darlene, is that there needs to be a house cleaning. We need to sweep every executive department for maggots. And I'm not talking about some Stalin-esque purge, but I remember when W was on the way out, and they said, "Oh yeah, we've planted loyal bushies all over the government, and you'll never be rid of them."
Hmm.
So,
Todd, do you have a favorite?
I don't have a favorite, only because there is a lot of talent. But there's a people I would like to see, but politically it's just not viable. Because this is such a treacherous time. You have to respect people's feelings at some point, because you have to do business with them.
Biden's going to have to have somebody. Because Biden is going to go back to the way it was and the way it's supposed to be. The president does not direct, because the Department of Justice has more autonomy than any other executive branch department. And so he's going to have somebody.
Trump.
He's going to have somebody that he can trust. And
well, I have somebody in mind.
Dish.
Well, first of all,
if you say Bob Mueller, I'm going to reach through the phone.
No. As much as I like him, no, not Bob. Although I'd like to see him play some role in something, but not that.
Sally Yates?
Yes, Sally. Because there's a great article in Politico, and I can send it to you, Bob. It was before the election. And I'm not necessarily a big hardcore fan of Politico, but they had a really, really good article in their magazine entitled "The Trump Taxes Story Exposes a Glaring Hole in Biden's Criminal Justice Platform." So this was before he was elected as our new president. And that article, along with I'm reading Weissman's book about Where the Law Ends, about his time in the Russia investigation with Robert Mueller. The problems within the Justice Department are legion and extremely deep. I mean, they're going to have to go down to the line attorneys and basically crowbar them out. They're going to have to really revamp that entire agency. Just putting a new leader in is not going to be enough. I mean, the reason that the Russia investigation, Mueller's investigation, took over, according to Weissman, the Manafort mess is because the Justice Department was basically flailing, and this was before Bill Barr got in, so we know it's far worse. I mean, it's like it's parasitic. It's like a virus, right, Todd? It's sort of like that Manafort, they were after Manafort in the Justice Department since 2014. Okay? These are supposed to be the creme de la creme of attorneys and individuals within the Justice Department who are supposed to be the best of the best, and they sucked. They were not doing the basics of investigation and ferreting out how to go after Manafort, because I remember thinking, why didn't they go after this guy long before the Russia investigation? It was because they weren't following the basic leads. And when Andrew Weissman, who is a very good prosecutor, he's excellent. He cut his teeth at Eastern District of New York. The Southern District of New York gets all the accolades, but the Eastern District of New York, they're the ones that went after the Gambinos, the Columbos. They're the ones that really went after the mafia crime families and John Gotti and all of them. And that's where he cut his teeth and where he learned how not to just be a really good prosecutor, but a really great investigator. And when
you know
he
what,
met
Darlene?
With the, yeah.
Manafort probably it was so well connected. You remember K Street? Like, he's totally connected.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And he and the people in the Justice Department, the people just doing their jobs, when they find stuff, just like if you're a researcher and you find something that somebody does not want you to print, you can't print it. You can't write it.
Well, that's a good point.
You see?
That's a good point. There, it was a combination of the two. A lot of the prosecutors, according to Weissman in his book, didn't pursue very obvious lines of investigation and also evidence gathering.
Right.
But also,
right. Why would you not do the obvious, like the basic?
The obvious.
Exactly.
Because
in other words, there's certain protocols
exactly.
You're supposed to, like, this is a gaping hole. How did you miss this? That's what you
exactly.
mean.
Exactly.
Right?
Which is why Weissman told Mueller we need to take this over, which is why it was absorbed by the special counsel's office and they went after Manafort. Bearing in mind, too, the political side, Todd, you're 100% correct in that it also crossed over into when Trump became president.
Mm-hmm.
So Weissman is saying it's conjecture, but we think, you know, I think that they didn't pursue as vigorously as they should have because Trump became president. And the line attorneys and the various departments within the Justice Department were cowed into not, you know, into kind of backing off a bit. So when you look at what to me appeared to be a combination of, you know, politicization, but also ineptitude, the Justice Department is in serious trouble because Barr came in kind of quote unquote late into the game, Todd. So basically
mm-hmm.
we're looking at a situation where it's only gotten worse. So whoever he appoints is going to have to really, like I said, do a complete revamp. I think the Justice Department will need to be revamped completely.
You know what? You're right, and I'm going to take 2 seconds with this because remember how many attorney generals and acted. Look what we went through. I mean, look how we started.
Yeah.
With Mr. Alabama, right? And he refused, and this is prescient because of what we're dealing with now with these race relations. We've known since the 90s that the white supremacist groups were rising in power, you know, Turner Diaries type folks, and it was just getting stronger and stronger. Yet, Jeff Sessions took it upon himself to ignore that and say, oh, Black Lives Matter is a terrorist group, and we have this.
Oh, but Todd, it goes back further than that. Remember, the W administration commissioned that DOJ report on domestic terrorism. It came out right after Obama became president, and the right wing had a fit and blamed Obama for it, and the FBI retracted it because their fifis were hurt. I saw a comment from somebody the other in the last 24 hours or so saying, well, I guess it'll take another Oklahoma City before these Michigan militias go back to ground again, and that's a terrifying thought. As to the question of AG, Stephen New York suggests Dana Nessel, the AG of Michigan. Billable Rick is on board with Sally Yates. Lee in New York would like to have Preet Bharara. And then Greg pointing out, Biden's going to tell us that our long national nightmare is over. Yay. Oh, wait. Where have I heard that one before? I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope not.
Well, this article, I will send it to you, Bob. It's by Ankush Kadori, and it was published in October 10th, and he's talking about the Justice Department, and it was coming on the heels of the whole scandal about Trump's taxes. And it says exposes a glaring hole in Biden's criminal justice reform. It's a really, really good article. But it talks about how the Justice Department has seriously dropped the ball on consumer fraud and, like, fraudulently marketed weight loss products. Okay, we see this all the time, I'm sure. When you go onto YouTube, you see all of these crazy ads that pop up. You know, you're looking to watch one thing, and it comes up to something else. But they said that they estimated that 40 million Americans have been victims of mass market consumer fraud in 2017, an increase of more than 50% from 6 years prior. FBI's annual report on internet crime concluded that 2019 saw both the highest number of complaints and the highest dollar losses reported in 20 years, with more than $3.5 billion in reported losses. Let's see, this is tax fraud, the part of multinational corporations as well as high-earning Americans. That's on the consumer fraud. It's quite costly to ignore the Brookings Institute of all places of all of those, organizations of conservatives.
Hey, Darlene, I hate to interrupt, but we are running out of time, and I just got a piece of breaking news from our buddy Mark in Florida, and it appears to be coming from a legitimate source, ABC. Headline. As of 30 minutes ago, Trump says he won't sign COVID relief bill unless Americans get $2,000 payments.
Oh!
That's hilarious. That's fucking hilarious.
Trump tweeted that Congress should amend the $900 billion stimulus package and send it back to him. And there's apparently a video involved. Let's see if I can bring that thing online.
Wow. Why? What's in it for him?
Oh, wait,
here
we go. Hold on.
Hold on.
We got to, because the audio's low on this particular device. And let me make sure I've got it cranked as far as I can get it. So this is 4 minutes.
Wow.
Here we go.
Throughout the summer, Democrats cruelly blocked COVID relief legislation in an effort to advance their left-wing agenda and influence the election.
Lie.
Then, a few months ago, Congress started negotiations on a new package to get urgently needed help to the American people. It's taken forever. However, the bill they are now planning to send back to my desk is much different than anticipated. It really is a disgrace. For example, among the more than 5,000 pages in this bill, which nobody in Congress has read because of its length and complexity, it's called the COVID relief bill, but it has almost nothing to do with COVID. This bill contains $85.5 million for assistance to Cambodia, $134 million to Burma, $1.3 billion for Egypt, and the Egyptian military, which will go out and buy almost exclusively.
Now, let's be clear. That has absolutely nothing to do with the relief bill. It's part of the omnibus spending bill. But he can't understand that because he's fucking stupid. Never mind. Let's continue.
Russian military equipment. $25 million for democracy and gender programs in Pakistan. $505 million to Belize, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Panama. $40 million for the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., which is not even open for business. $1 billion for the Smithsonian.
But it keeps people employed, that money does, of course. And it, yeah, but again, He doesn't understand what he doesn't know that he doesn't know.
And an additional $154 million for the National Gallery of Art. Likewise, these facilities are essentially not open. $7 million for reef fish management, $25 million to combat Asian carp, $2.5 million to count.
Okay, I got to get out of here because I got a bunch of stuff I have to do out of the program, but you get the idea. The fact of the matter is the Asian carp problem is a real problem, and it's part of the omnibus bill. But I see the stinking hands of Peter Navarro and most particularly Stephen Miller in this, because
Stephen Miller.
Yeah, when you go, hey, yeah, because the best way to keep people at home, remember the wall. The best way to keep people at home is to support their local economies so they can stay home and so that they can fight back against the governments can fight back against the murderous SOBs who are killing people.
Yeah, there's a price.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Stephen Miller, it's evident of his hand in that when you start to hear about the foreign aid. That's all the magazines you hear. Burma, they were getting money to Vietnam.
Yep. Hey, guys, I do have to go. This has been a magnificent conversation, and if I had my way, it would go on for another hour.
Forever.
But
can I just say one last thing?
Yes, please.
The reason I like Sally Yates, according to this Politico article, which I'll send you, Bob, is that she required prosecutors to pursue individuals who committed criminal prosecution at corporations instead of merely entering into big-dollar settlements with the companies and moving on. So she was doing that. She was making them go at – she was having them go after the corporations, the Sacklers and all of them criminally.
Yeah.
I was thinking
about exactly that thing last week when I was talking about the settlement the announcement that was made by Tyson Foods about sacking their mid-level management who were wagering on which of their poor desperate workers would get COVID first. Did you notice who represented Tyson Foods? The same person who represented Chiquita Banana when their board admitted that they had engaged in murder for hire against union organizers in Colombia. A brilliant lawyer by the name of Eric Holder.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. But I do.
By the way, yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Yes,
love you guys. Thanks.
Republicans said she's a non-starter. But I like Sally Yates is a person of integrity. That's what we want. But she's a non-starter
exactly.
to the Republicans.
Yeah, her non-starter stat.
She knows the Justice Department. She was shat on by Comey. I think she would be great. But that's just me. That's my dream.
Me too. Thanks, y'all. Take care. That was a fantastic conversation this evening, a great roundtable of an impromptu nature. So we close the program down by $270. Tomorrow we will be at $570. And thank you to all of you, all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal, partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to all of you who jump in a la carte. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Remember, Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteroseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Stay home if you can. If you have to be out and about, for God's sakes, wear your mask. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands. Carry hand sanitizer with you. Use it liberally. Wear gloves. Maintain your social distance, not just 6 feet, but 10 feet, if people are wearing masks. If they're not, just don't go there.
And above all, if somebody comes towards you saying,
the Democrats held up the COVID relief,
when in fact the Democrats introduced the HEROES Act in May, avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all.